That's brand new number one on the Sideshow Countdown. That's the Foo Fighters, of course, with Rope. That's a wrap for us. I want to thank the guys in 6 a.m. for stopping by, Carrie.
They were so much fun. I love DJ Ashba and James Michael. Thanks, guys, for hanging with us.
Easy going. We'll be back next week with more of the biggest songs in rock. Plus, as always, I'm going to handpick some songs just for you. I'm Nikki Sixx.
I'm Carrie Kasem.
And we'll see you next weekend.
The Sideshow is now over. Go ahead. Stick a golden fork in it. We're done.
Now.
It cannot take long.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. Welcome to WRIF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan. Peter and Julene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter and Julene.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome, everyone. Julene Jordan, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Yeah, it's a little, my headphones are kind of quiet tonight.
Okay.
No, so you're going to have to rave extra loud.
Well, this is going to be quite a show. I just got off a plane from New York about an hour and a half ago. And, hey, here I am.
How was New York? There was some protesting going on there.
I
had a feeling you were in the middle of it.
Well, I wasn't in the middle. I was kind of on the edges. I saw our old friend Harvey Wasserman, who is
anti-nuke guy,
put together the late 70s No Nuke concert that Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young and Bonnie Raitt and lots of other people.
I don't know who
Jackson
else
Brown.
There, he's a cool dude.
He's a very cool dude. He was it took place in historic Union Square, 14th Street,
and
where the unions actually used to come and protest, and then the cops would come and beat them up, you know, send horses in and let them have it. But it's had a great history. And this, of course, was it was an anti-war demonstration. And, well, they
all
should.
Wars.
Yes, yeah. Well, particularly these ones that we're facing right now that seem to make less and less sense as we go on. But before we go on, let us tell you the details about this program. It's a phone-in talk show. WRIF gives you Jalene and I the opportunity to get on the air, give our opinions, and do it for a couple hours, then we get back to rock and roll.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So Peter Werby, gee.
You know your name.
Yeah. And Julene Jordan.
Most people in this town know your name.
Well, I'm still pretty scattered, I have to say.
Okay.
That's not a bad thing. I'll tell you kind of why I am.
Let's see how good. No excuses.
All
these years have taught you. Let's see how well you can do it on the fly. 313-298-9743. You were waiting for that.
Yes, but I didn't even give the big one. 313-298-WRIF. And if you want to email us, it's pretty easy as well. calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Now, my website, which I'm not even going to spell for you tonight, Peter Werby, I will, werbe.com, is kind of frozen. It's a whole big technical deal. There's still a lot of good stuff there, but I haven't put a lot of new material on there. Maybe right now the best place to go is to our Facebook page, which is simply facebook.com/nightcall.
It is.
Right. And new friends always wanted. And when you call 313-298-WRIF, Athena or Sarah, or maybe both, I don't know how it goes in there, will answer the phone.
Yeah,
and then
maybe one answers one hour, one answers the other.
Yeah, we don't know how they do it.
All we know is they do it well. That's all we care about.
Well, the big story that I don't know how many of you noticed, it was big headlines. This $38 billion budget deal was reached to avert a showdown, a shutdown, rather. It was a showdown.
It was a showdown. It was a showcase showdown in the price of as right.
The price is wrong.
The price is wrong. That was absolutely insane when it came down. All of a sudden, I'm hearing Planned Parenthood. I'm like, wait a minute. They're at the point where they're talking about my lady parts, and that's where we're going with this?
They want to cut money. The Republicans want
People
to cut money.
Are in.
For women's services. Yeah, and kids would get hurt, and the elderly would get hurt, and the poor would get hurt. everybody that essentially the Republicans either actively despise because so many of them are psychos.
Truly psychos.
Yeah, and or the ones that aren't psychos are just cold-hearted and couldn't care less about anybody that's not doesn't have the advantages.
Yeah.
And, of course, that's sort of psycho, isn't it?
Sure is.
You know,
there's a lot of words for that.
You know what? I think I have mentioned this before. I just finished a book by Philip K. Dick, who is the this great science fiction writer who has had any number of his stories made into movies. Probably the best known one. Well, it was either Blade Runner.
Oh, yeah.
Or Total Recall.
Right. Another great one.
And their original titles were Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep?
I always forget this.
Yeah. And the other one was I Can Dream It For You Wholesale, with the one with Arnold. But the thing about Blade Runner was, this is really key, and this is what makes his science fiction, Philip K. Dick's science fiction, so radical. Who were they? I mean, kind of this squad had to hunt down replicants, these androids that were so identical to human beings, you know, inside and outside and inside, that the only way that they could find out if they were, in fact, these replicants.
Wait, I know this.
What?
Something identifying through their eyes.
They had to look through their eyes, and they could tell whether they had the capacity to empathize.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what made them human beings.
Do you think we need to test these Republicans in Congress?
If you lack the capacity to empathize, in other words, to have, it's a combination, what would you say, of sympathy and compassion.
Yeah.
And I think those are kind of different.
Yeah, they really are.
And those are missing from people that don't have a sense of humanity.
Absolutely. Devoid.
Yeah. So anyway, so there's this big anti-war rally at Union Square, then march to City Hall down Broadway. And of course, you all heard about it, right? Because it was splashed all over the news, big signs.
Once again, I hate to tell you, Peter.
Really? And remember last week I was reporting that the Teabaggers had a rally at Capitol Hill. 300 people attended.
And it was everywhere.
I mean, but it was there. It wasn't everywhere. Yeah, but you're right. So it's pretty clear how this all comes down. I think at least locally that there was, in fact, there was national stories about this. Labor unions, civil rights groups, lots of other civil liberties groups, people concerned with social justice, held hundreds of rallies and teach-ins last Monday to defend collective bargaining and to tie it to that cause that Reverend Martin Luther King was fighting for in the days before his death 43 years ago.
And you were at one of those.
Well, there was a big one in downtown Detroit. Now, I know you wanted to go, but you had to do your school thing, right?
I did, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, there was a few thousand people. Well, I'm trying to think. Maybe it was because there was all these feeder marches, and then everybody met at the labor march.
It looked like there were a lot of people there.
Yeah, there's some. There are some shots on our Facebook page.
Yeah.
Yeah, just go to Night Call on Facebook and you can see them. And
nice shots. You took some good ones.
Well, thank you. Mm-hmm. But there was, I would say at best 3,000, maybe 1,500 or 2,000. And that's, you know, that's when you're there.
That's decent.
So there were people there that I knew that I didn't see. You know what I mean? It was that big.
Right.
Those of you, some of you who never have been to a demonstration in your life probably don't understand this, but there's a lot of ways to gauge it. I mean, sometimes people say, who was at the demonstration? And we say, well, the usual suspects.
Right.
That means there was 40 people there and you knew every single one of them.
The drum circle people, the ones with the black mask.
Yeah.
I mean, there really are some standard group.
Right.
I love it.
Right. But it's really nice because what's happening, like when thousands turned out in Lansing when we went to that demonstration a couple, what was it, Wednesdays ago or something?
It was a few.
Yeah, about 3 weeks ago. So, same thing like in Wisconsin to oppose these anti-working people, anti-middle-class bill that the Republicans wanted and now has been passed. And already is beginning to be used as blackmail here in the city of Detroit, although we're not in the city of Detroit, And that
was close.
Yeah, that was, yeah, we are darn close, aren't we? And what this sets up is a system of emergency managers. This when the governor determines that there is a crisis.
A need, yeah.
Yeah, in a financial crisis in a city, a county, a school district, he first off, decides that's the case. Sometimes it may be requested, but even if it's not requested, that the governor can determine that there's a crisis.
Yeah, well, he now, just says, here's the new person.
Yeah, that's
what's in charge.
They're the crisis, the financial crisis manager.
Yeah.
So now Detroit Mayor Dave Bing is going to essentially run this blackmail thing on the Detroit public employees, teachers, and everyone else. Now, there's an over $3 billion deficit in the city of Detroit. And what he wants to put forth is this 5-year deficit elimination plan that would include deep cuts to, guess what, health care of the employees and fringe benefits.
Yep.
So here are people that are working, and I know some of you want to stereotype these folks are not working real hard or stuff like that, but, you know, stuff gets done.
Walk a day in their shoes.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I don't know how hard people work. And everybody's got a story about how they were in this department or that department. And, you know, in fact, my wife always says you guys can call up and bitch at me for this or at her.
What?
But the construction workers, like on roads, they always seem to be just, you know, kind of leaning on their shovel.
Maybe they're just taking a short break.
Exactly. Because I don't, you know what?
I don't judge. I never judge that.
You know what? The roads get built.
Yes, right? They do.
They do. In fact, we need more roads built. And the idea that someone would work, you know what, 8 hours without a break or without leaning on your shovel a little bit.
I'd be leaning all day long.
Come on. Yeah. So this is the way this Governor Snyder's bill is being used. He's going to say, okay, guess what? Either you have to agree to the cuts. You have to eat the cuts that have been created by forces way beyond your control, way beyond my control, not me, but Mayor Bing saying that, way beyond the control of the people in the city of Detroit, way beyond certainly all the union workers. They didn't create this. They didn't create this. The collapse of the economy was nothing but wasn't in any way done by the people who are being asked to pay the price.
Who are being punished,
For being punished.
For nothing. And they did nothing.
And the people that did do it, they're being punished how? No. In fact, great story. Oh, I know what I wanted to say.
There's some reward involved for those people.
For the people that created the problem in the first place.
Right.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
Oh, well, here's one of the things I wanted to say about, I was just saying at the beginning of the show, that I just got in from, I was at a demonstration yesterday, so you start yelling at those a little.
Oh, yeah, usually a little more rough. So
I wasn't yelling that much.
Well, you're chanting with the people. If you don't do a little bit of that, what kind of protester are you?
Couldn't have been how much I drank last night, could it?
Maybe a combination.
But, I didn't, one of the things that Jillian and I depend on, like most people that do, even the people that are the DJs do a lot of show prep. I mean, you know, they...
Outside of the show, we do a lot of, getting ready and reading and researching lots.
To know, the DJs even, to know the music.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, because...
happening?
You could conceivably put everything on the air and not even know anything about the bands, but they do. If you're doing news or you're doing a morning show like Drew and Mike or something like that, you got to do a lot of show prep. Drew Lane gets in here. I mean, it's astounding. He gets in here sometimes at 4 a.m., right?
Mm-hmm.
He does.
No, he does. They come in early. They do come in early.
And Drew Lee, sometimes he gets in at 4 a.m. and he leaves like at 3 p.m.
I know.
Yeah. And sometimes looks it. Yeah. Sorry, Drew.
Well, it's a grueling, really, mornings are a grueling shift.
It is. Anyway. So I depend on Jillian. Jillian depends on me to read all these news sites, to read newspapers and magazines, to go to online news sites, and then send these to each other. And then what we do here, these are all the stories. When I read from these things, Jillian has printed all of these out for both of us. I haven't looked at a thing in the last 4 days, other than probably how 90% of Americans do. You kind of see a headline or a crawler.
Right. Times Square.
Yeah.
That's all you saw.
That says, government shutdown averted. $38 billion compromise. Or something like that. The rest of the stuff, I didn't even know anything about.
Did you learn anything from the reading?
What you gave me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, what I read
was
between...
Was there anything that you're like, wow?
Yes, between 9:45 and...
now.
Yeah, now I did. Well, this was, we kind of knew this, but here in the New York Times, and this was from April 9th, so that's yesterday, right? The drought is over, at least for the CEOs, the chief executive officers. After shrinking during the 2008-2009 recession, paychecks for top American executives are growing again, in many cases significantly so. Now, remember, you got to connect the dots. That's what Jalene and I used to talk about when we did this nationally syndicated show. Mm-hmm. We don't do this too much anymore.
We still connect the dots. We just don't call it that all the time.
Well, the thing is, if this is just isolated phenomena, and it's something that people just tisk about because, oh, well, that's bad, and that's bad. Well, when you start connecting the dots and you get a whole picture, then something else is different.
It's a lot scarier.
Yeah, what is it? The sum of the parts is greater than the whole. I think that's it. Or is it the whole is greater than the sum?
No.
The sum of the parts is greater than the whole.
Let's not George Bush it here.
Yeah, right. All right, rarely has the view from the corner office seemed so at odds. That means the boss's office. Seemed so at odds with the view from the street corner. Hey, quite a phrase. At a time when millions of Americans are trying to hang on to homes and millions more are trying to hang on to jobs, the chief executives of major corporations like 3M, General Electric, Cisco Systems are making as much today as they were before the recession hit. Indeed, some are even making more. The disparity is especially stark as companies are swimming in cash. You ready for this? They're swimming in cash. In the fourth quarter, profits at American businesses were up an astounding 29.2%, almost 30%. Wow. This is the profits, the fastest growth in more than 60 years. Collectively, American corporations logged profits at an annual rate of $1,678 billion. That's the profits from American companies. $1.2 trillion. And then the next line says, so far, this recovery has not trickled down. So what you have then is what essentially, and I don't say this disparagingly about anybody, is a cockroach war. I mean, we're these little bugs, scurrying around on the floor, fighting one another. So Mayor Bing, who basically is a pretty decent guy and understands the city of Detroit, he's threatening these unions essentially with dissolution if they don't agree to these wage cuts at a time when the rich people are making more and more and the corporations are making more. And as the article said, they're swimming in cash. Who else is swimming in cash other than the top 5%? Nobody else.
Yeah, I don't know too many people swimming in the green there.
I was reading, appropriately, the New Yorker magazine, and this just gives you an idea. In 1980, what happened? Remember, we always talk about what happened in 1980. Oh, man, now that was 31 years. Ronald Reagan. R-A-Y.
Worst president ever.
Yeah, yeah. He's right up there with Buchanan and Hoover.
And G.W.
And G.W., yeah. The top, let me see. In 1980, the best-off tenth of American families, that's top 10%, collected about a third of the nation's income, which is pretty high. The top one, got to start this one again.
Okay.
In 1980, the best-off tenth of American families collected about a third of the nation's income. Now they're getting close to half. So 10% of the Americans are getting half of the income.
Astounding.
Do you think they've gotten smarter? Do you think that they've gotten, working harder?
No.
So what's going on here? How have they wound up with so much money?
How about this? Greedier and slimier.
And essentially looting.
Yes, absolutely.
So, yeah. So there's X amount of wealth. How's it distributed? And, when you say anything about taking money from the rich, you get these guys, what do they always say? That's their money.
You can just see their beet red faces.
And I want to say, you doofus, they took your money.
No, you do say that.
Do I? Oh, okay. And they took my money. And they took everybody you know's money. They took everybody's money and they made themselves wealthier because they needed more money to.
What is it?
Well, they have everything.
Yeah.
So why do they take all of our money?
I mean, they're definitely not saving the world. They're not saving the planet. They're not feeding the hungry.
They're swimming in cash. That's what they're doing. Let's see. There's more here in the New Yorker. The top 1% is getting a full fifth. So 1% of the population gets 20% of the income, double what it got in 1980. The super rich, the top 1/10 of the top 1%, which is to say the top 1,000th. And, yes, we have to say thank you to Ron for that. Remember, he corrected us last week.
Well, we need you. It's
have been the biggest winners of all. What is always called their compensation, wage workers lucky enough to have a job simply get paid, has quadrupled. So the absolute ultra-rich, the command center of American economy, the people that pull the strings on everything, that make sure that that Dave Bing has to threaten city workers with dissolution of their unions unless they agree to pay more money out of their already meager salaries, their money quadrupled in the last 31 years.
And it's so crazy, Peter, because this is in the midst of the worst depression since the 30s, since the Big Depression, the Great Depression. And so everyone else, like you said, scurrying around and trying to pick up crumbs, whatever they can gather in the corner over there. And these guys are laughing all the way to the bank. All the way.
Here's this Russian billionaire, Yuri Milner, who is a big investor in Facebook, does a lot of his work, if you call it that. I don't know what the hell these guys do. He is, he just bought a $100 million house, single family house.
Oh, I saw this, and that's out in California?
Yeah.
I didn't realize there was such a monster in the United States. Oh, my God.
But, you know, I want to tell you, you know, we always are kind of beating up the Republicans.
That's right, we are, Peter.
You know, can you imagine?
I make no apologies.
Can you imagine Republicans anywhere supporting something for minorities other than the ultra wealthy, which is a vast minority? I mean, any other minority other than the ultra wealthy?
Can you say that again?
Can you imagine Republicans taking what would you call it? The standing up for a minority?
No. Only if they work for them, maybe.
Yeah. How about this? The Republicans in Maine have approved legislation in the state Senate and House that would make them the first state to make an exception to the laws that prohibit switchblade knives.
Oh, yeah, I thought it was a joke when I read the headline. Yeah.
Backers of the measure say legalizing switchblades would eliminate a need for one-arm people.
Yeah, so if you only have one arm, they're going to make it legal for you to use a switchblade. I'm sorry, you shouldn't laugh.
I mean, you know, come on. I actually know a guy with one arm, so I'm not laughing at them.
There's the new movie coming out about the girl who had her arm, the surfer who had her arm cut off by the
shark. What is that? Then there was that.
What was shark.
What was that other thing? The guy got his arm caught in the rock? But something hours, it was 140
hours. Oh, yeah,
hours.
And he cut his own arm off.
So they're going to, if they go to Maine, they're going to
Monty Python where the arms and the blood goes flying. Okay.
In search of the Holy Grail, But the point being, I just don't want you to think that all these Republicans are doing are thinking about how can they can transfer more wealth to the wealthy. How can they destroy unions? How can they destroy the
Democratic
Party?
They're thinking of the one-armed Americans.
Yeah.
Standing up.
You may remember also that the insane governor, LePage, what's his name, Paul LePage, who decided that he wanted to get rid of this labor mural in the Department of Labor.
Yeah, in that same state?
Maine.
Yeah, in Maine.
Yeah.
What's going on in Maine?
So he didn't want this mural displayed that depicted the state's labor history. He said it took the side of labor too much in the labor department.
Okay. Yeah.
So he had it removed.
The struggles of labor. Oh my gosh.
And now there was federal money used to create it, and the U.S. Department of Labor says we want the money back.
And that is about $60,000.
Yeah, that's good. Hey, if you want to join us, Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan, we're at 313-298-WRIF. Now, in New York, feel free.
I mean, we can go on and on and on, but please call.
Yeah. Just came back from New York City, which is having, you know, all this wealth concentrated there. In fact, you know, you walk down Fifth Avenue, which I did today, and the stores there. What was my wife telling me was the most expensive store, and she wanted to go in there? The shoe store, that $600 little teeny skinny shoes.
You mean the Louboutins with the red bottoms?
Maybe. It's a guy. I think it may have been a Japanese name.
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know.
I wear Converse. Birkenstocks, you know. I mean, come on.
I go to Payless Shoes.
Hey.
Because you don't have to pay.
You don't have, really?
Well, isn't that what it says? Payless.
Payless. Payless. Pay less.
It doesn't, if it was two words, pay less.
Oh, payless shoes.
But it says payless.
I had never thought about that
so
one
I think,
before.
I'm one of these days I'm going to do that. I'm going to walk into the store and walk out. And when they have me arrested, I'm going to say, what's the name of this joint is payless. All right. So in New York, and you know the kind of tragedies. I mean, think about 9/11, let alone some of these cranes falling, and they've had all these weird-ass accidents.
Accidents, yeah.
Right. But now that Mayor Bloomberg, this billionaire, wants to close 25 fire companies in New York City.
That.
Yeah.
And you remember after 9/11, I mean, you go to New York and everyone wants their picture taken with a firefighter. And some of those people are Republicans. And I'd like to question those Republicans and say, okay, so you veer off at certain places. Don't you want these people to have jobs? Don't you want these people to, you know, have the best of everything because of what they've done?
Well, this is where it all comes down to. You know, I mean, I'm surprised that the, you know, there used to be like no public fire departments, no public police. There didn't used to be public teachers. This is a rather recent phenomenon.
As in, how recent?
You know, last couple hundred years.
Right.
Or so, I mean, you kind of had to make it 1811. Yeah, I mean, around in there, they started understanding that one of the functions of government would be to provide a regularized public sector. So
I think it's a great idea.
Yeah, it works because you kind of get like your streets clean.
Kind of have things like that. Yeah.
Although,
repair.
Yeah, we're kind of going the other way.
Bridges.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, those aren't working out real well. Let's see. Okay, so poor Michael Bloomberg. He's number 10 of the richest Americans. Of course, led by Bill Gates.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. But he's only worth $18 billion.
Aww.
And what do we always say when when there's a crisis in New York City? Michael, write a check.
Yeah, just seriously, call your banker. Have the funds transferred.
You know,
call it a day.
One thing that I've found
I would.
Pleasing is that no one has called 313-298-WRIF lately. And when we say confiscate the wealth, we've got a number of things. First, confiscate the wealth of people that aren't using it. Like here, the poorest guy among the top 10.
There you go again.
Yeah. is worth $18 billion. Say you took from him because he is just, as that article said, swimming in cash. Took from him because he is not utilizing this money within the commonwealth of exchange that makes this society go for everyone, not just for people like him.
Mm-hmm.
That he, well, man, I couldn't think of anything to spend it on, and I have anybody to hire. So we, the people, confiscate $17.5 billion.
Ooh.
All right. I mean, that's, I don't know, somebody, maybe Ron, you can do the math for me.
There you go, getting crazy again.
Yeah, what percentage is 17.5 of 18?
Never ask me.
Yeah, so it's like 90 or 95%. So poor Michael is left with $500 million.
Aww.
So I would ask anybody that thinks that this is unfair or communistic or would stifle initiative or something like that, tell me what's the harm. Who would be harmed? I mean, if someone came to me and said, hey, look, we, Pete, are going to now take 50% of your income. I mean, that would really screw me. And I assume you, and I assume that most of you.
Everyone.
There would be a harm. We'd say, hey, look, you can't do this to us. This is unfair taxation.
But this does happen.
Yeah, it's going to harm me and my family tremendously.
Might lose the house.
How would Michael Bloomberg be hurt by the amount of money that he has accumulated and leave him with $500 million? You could 313-298-WRIF. And then what do we say? The top 10 total, $270 billion among 10 guys. So the average is $27 billion. Knock them all down to $500 million. The other thing, of course, and that gets back to the biggest story this week, which was that this $38 billion budget deal, can we make a deal? And, of course, the Democrats just crumpled, just absolutely crumpled.
Yep.
And it said, okay, we will cut $38 billion from the budget, and they're not even sure what was cut. There's this enormous bill, and they finally just said, well, we got to admit this.
That's scary.
There is no budget. There, I mean, let me rephrase it. There is no deficit crisis whatsoever. There's a deficit. Everybody knows that.
And we're
that.
Talking before just the other days.
Yeah, there is no deficit. There is no deficit. That's not, I'm sorry. There is a deficit. There is no problem. Why is there no problem? Because these corporations are swimming in cash. Because these billionaires are swimming in cash. They have got to pay the freight. The kind of people that are going to be hurt by this are the average people, the poor people, disabled people, children, the poor, on and on and on like that. Like, for instance, this Republican plan wants to slash Medicaid, among other things that could cost the economy up to 2 million private sector jobs.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, these people are absolutely insane. The plan, according to the New York Times, would condemn millions to the ranks of the uninsured. Oh, this, would condemn millions to the ranks of the uninsured because they want to get rid of the health plan, raise health costs for seniors, and renege on the obligation to keep poor children fed. Did the Republicans envision lower taxes for the wealthy than even George W. Bush imagined?
Oh.
A permanent extension for his tax cuts, plus large permanent estate tax cuts, a new business tax cut, and a lower top income tax rate for the richest taxpayers.
Hey, Peter, why not go for the gusto? Look, it looks like they're doing it.
Yeah.
Right?
They, you know, some of them, I mean, they can't all just be whores for the wealthy.
I think they could all be.
Some of them may actually have an economic theory that if you somehow free the wealth of the upper classes, that they will, in fact, someone wrote this last week to calltalkyes@yahoo.com, that then this would trickle down in the form that the wealthy would have more money to invest. But bad news. They're not doing it.
They're just sitting on it.
They're sitting on it. That line just keeps coming up to my mind over and over again. These corporations are swimming in cash. So the reason that there is, we know there's a deficit problem. There is no deficit crisis. The money is all here. The wealthy and their operatives in the economy and in the political system created the crises, created the deficit. They are the ones that have to pay for it, not us, not you, not your mother and father, not your grandparents, not you coming up. There's no reason. We didn't create the problem. Their mismanagement and, in many cases, criminal behavior caused what we're facing right now. And there's no reason that we should be fighting at the bottom to say, well, if we cut this from Medicaid, then we'll save $3 billion and then, you know, someone doesn't have medical care. All right, we're going to take a break. You ready for it?
I'm ready.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jolene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
We're college roommates turned real-life roommates.
Peas in a pod.
And still BFFs.
We even got the same car insurance discounts from Esurance.
I got my discounts on their website.
But I got mine over the phone from this awesome Esurance agent.
Like, how awesome?
Like, half as awesome as you.
Awesome.
For awesome car insurance discounts, get a quote today at Esurance.com or 1-800-ESURANCE. Esurance. Technology when you want it. People when you don't. Not available in all states. Some restrictions apply. Discounts may vary by state. See site for details.
Awesome.
Who's watching your home when you're not there? It could be a burglar. Burglars prefer to break in when they think no one is home and no one will stop them. Don't be an easy target for intruders. Protect your home with a free security system monitored by ADT, the leader in home security. Pick up your phone now and get free hardware, free medical and fire alerts, and free activation. It's an $850 value. Just call Protect Your Home, your authorized ADT dealer, at 1-877-653-8844. You'll get 24-hour protection, and there's no cost for parts or activation. Call now about a free security system monitored by ADT. Call 1-877-653-8844. $99 installation charge, 36-month monitoring agreement at $35.99 per month. Call for terms and conditions to this offer and protect your home license numbers. Call now, 1-877-653-8844. That's 1-877-653-8844.
Betsy, look at these sweaters. They look amazing on our girls.
Maybe.
Come on, what's wrong?
Suzanne, I have no business being in the store. I should not be shopping. Things are really tight. We're behind on our mortgage.
Listen, Bill and I had the same problem, and we got some really great counseling, and it was free. I'm going to email you the information.
If you even think you may be in danger of foreclosure, call the National Foundation for Credit Counseling today at 866-687-6322 or visit mortgagehelpnow.org. Public service from the NFCC.
How old's the roof on your home? If it's over 15 years old, how much longer will it last before the leaks begin? Think about the damage. Then think about this. If it's time for a new roof, call Sears to get your roofing done right. And if you call Sears right now, you'll save $500. Just call 1-877-938-1414. Sears licensed fully insured contractors install a variety of shingles and styles that are built for long-lasting performance. And you'll save $500 if you call now. So call Sears for a free in-home consultation. 1-877-938-1414. Hurry. Offer ends soon. Not available in all states. Installation provided by Sears authorized licensed contractors. License information available upon request. So if you need a new roof, call Sears Roofing. Call right now and save $500. Call 1-877-938-1414. That's 1-877-938-1414. Sears.
Man Up with 101 WRIF and Jim Beam for another Riff Ultimate Man Card Adventure. Listen to win your very own WRIF Man Card or Wool Man Card, along with tickets to see an exclusive performance with Kid Rock in the intimate setting of the Machine Shop in Flint. One lucky Riff winner will also head to the show Kid Rock style, taking a limo to the show with pre-show party passes, and you'll get to meet the band. The Riff's Ultimate Man Card Adventure. Listen and win from Jim Beam Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey and 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks. This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Julene Jordan.
All right, so essentially, that's what we're saying. Eat the rich, they're eating us.
That's a nice segue, by the way, Peter.
Yes, they've created the problem. They now are back on their feet triple time. They're making more money than they ever have. The corporate profits up 30%, and we're tussling at the bottom. I hesitate to tell this joke again, but a corporate CEO, a teabagger, and a union woman are sitting at the table. They bring 10 cookies. The CEO grabs 9 cookies, and he looks at the teabagger and says, "Hey, that union gal's trying to steal your cookie."
Oh, man.
So that's it. We're fighting over this cookie, right? We say, those union so-and-sos, they're blah, 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 or they're getting way too much money, or the union janitors.
It's a racket.
Yeah, like that. Whereas the wealthy are swimming in cash. I wanted to emphasize a little, which I didn't, I think, well enough at the beginning of the show. Last Monday was a particularly important day in the fight back against all of this. And there were hundreds of rallies and teach-ins across the country. They were called We Are One. They were held in all 50 states. And it commemorated the fact on the anniversary of the slaying of Dr. Martin Luther King that he was marching with 1,300 striking sanitation workers in Memphis. And we all kind of know that. But the importance of it, I think, sometimes is lost, particularly right now. So there are any number of ongoing activities. And for those of you who are in the working class and you think, oh, that means all the guys in industrial work. Well, it doesn't mean all the guys in the industrial work. It means all of us who get a paycheck.
It's a pretty big category.
And I got to tell you, a lot of the people I know write paychecks for people. I would say a lot of people I know, but a number of people I know that are business owners, they're decent people, they're liberals, I'm not trying to make out that anybody that's an employer is some sort of evil guy. Most of them, but
Peter.
Now, you know what it is? I mean, when you're a small businessman, you're strangled by the market. I mean, when business starts to go down, what do you got to do? You got to lay off workers. You got
to
think about cutting
bank loans.
Yeah, you got to cut back on benefits and what have you. I mean, that sort of comes with it.
My dad was a small business guy for many, many, many years, and he really never had to do any of that I know of.
Did he treat his employees decently?
And he was amazing. Okay. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. But there were 175 teach-ins also around the country the next Tuesday. I haven't heard anything about those, so if anybody has a call on it, let me know. And let's see, Drew and Tony and Chris and Ron and Bill, you hold on because I just want to bring up one other thing, and then we will get right to your calls. This is real quick. Why are there so many crazy people in this country?
I don't
country?
Know. It's really seems like it's gone just...
Getting worse.
More mad than ever. Yeah.
Well, this Reverend Terry Jones that...
Florida.
Yeah, in Florida, that burned the Koran. Did you know he is coming to Dearborn?
No.
Where he is going, he wants to take part in this protest at the largest mosque in the United States.
He does not understand Detroit, does he not?
Yeah, no, he
needs to pay attention to the Charlie Sheen situation, how he bombed in Detroit. We don't take crap from anybody.
Now, there is something, and I don't want to give this group any publicity, so I'm not even going to say their name, but it's not his group. And the group is they're committed to the upholding the Christian faith. So did they ever hear of the Crusades? So here is this right-wing nationalist Christian group, which almost by definition, and armed, they're a militia as well. So these, by definition, are fascists, as far as I'm concerned. They meet all the standard definitions. And they're coming to Dearborn, which is the highest concentration of Islamic people, Middle Eastern people, Arabic people in the country.
In the country.
And that I would say that is a blessing for our area. I certainly feel like that.
I do too.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And so this and remember last week we were talking about this hate group that wants to put these anti-Islamic signs on the side of buses. So this is what
they're going on.
Yeah.
They're going up.
Well,
as far as we know.
Yeah, I guess it is. Well, they're both sides in this are in the dispute about the bus signs are back in court tomorrow.
Oh, good to know.
But
I'm glad that's not over.
This is tricky for people that really have a commitment to the First Amendment on both of these things, because you know what? I mean, they're talking in Dearborn, like the chief of police said, well, he's got to make a decision. Police Chief Ronald Haddad, who our head at, however he says it, that they got to figure out a couple of things. Is this going to create too much of a problem? Is there going to be a traffic problem? Would it take regular patrol cars off the street? Will it hinder any emergency services? This is total BS.
It really is.
It is. That we are allowed to have unpopular demonstrations. You can go through history. And you start seeing in any number of cases, including in this country, including not so long ago, I mean 30 years ago, stuff like that, is that people that held demonstrations for unpopular causes were attacked by mobs or were attacked by the police more often, actually.
Yeah.
Now, hopefully, we've gotten to a situation where we understand that part of democracy is letting people speak, even if we find it wrong, stupid, hateful, inappropriate, whatever. That's why the Supreme Court of the United States, even the far right wing, evil twins, Scalia and Thomas, upheld the right of those absolutely vile Christian characters from Reverend Phelps Church is right protest at funerals.
Yeah, military funerals.
I mean, I bet you they would probably have 1% approval rating for doing what they're doing. I mean, absolutely despicable. I mean, it's a despicable act in and of itself. But if you remember that church's message about, God hates gays and that's why God loves dead soldiers, that's what they hold these signs up saying.
And they're even more derogatory.
Yeah.
How they say it.
So they're really horrible. But the court, even the worst right wingers on the court, held that the Constitution protects speech. You know?
Yeah. And even this nutbag Terry Jones, who's planning on coming here, and Haddad said that Terry Jones, the Reverend, appeared on TV with guns, saying he's ready to die for this, which now raises the threat level for us,
yeah.
for the community, in their opinion.
Well, what I would like to see is allow them to do that, and no one at all respond or react.
Right. Just let them go on their little corner, say their thing, and then get the hell out of here.
Yeah. Good. Goodbye.
Bye.
Yeah.
Later.
Right. All right. Let's finally take some calls. Thank you for your patience. Already a couple of people drop off, so which means there's a couple more open lines.
I'll call back.
Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan on Night Call, 313-298-WRIF. Hi, you're on the air with Peter and Jalene. Welcome.
Drew. I'm a Peter. How are you?
You're Drew.
Yeah. First of all, I praise you, Pete. I've been listening since 83, man. You inspired me to fight the good fight. Like, I got a Peter Werby exclusive for you, buddy.
What's that?
You know all the bands, Earth Phase, Tool, Rage Against the Machine, Metallica.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm the muse for all of them.
You are.
I'm the muse, brother. I'm telepathic. I'm in China like the sun's. My whole life's been documented by music.
Wow, that's cool. Music
pretty heavy, isn't it?
Music is powerful, man.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't want to break into show business, my friend.
Well, wait a minute. Let me ask you a question. Do they know? Do they know you're their muse?
Do all these bands know?
Andy Rollins, I freaked him out when I met him.
Yeah.
Kind of freaked out Honey DeFranco when I met her.
Yeah.
She's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Henry Rollins, way cool, man.
Yeah. Okay.
He puts on a good live show, Peter. Have you ever seen him?
I've read his stuff.
Really?
Yeah. Henry Rollins.
Yeah. It's even better in person.
All right, Drew, rock out. Here's Tony in Windsor. Tony, thanks for making our show international. You're on the air.
Oh, yeah. Well, good evening. Thanks for taking the call. And I make a point of listening to your show every night. Not every night, but every Sunday when you come on the air.
Gotcha.
Given your Canadian perspective and living in Windsor, which, you know, as you know, is just a stone's throw from Detroit, people in Windsor can enjoy all of the good things that Detroit has to offer, the sports, the cultural facilities. You know, we think it's a great city, and we go over there. But
Windsor,
we can't understand why America in general is such a crazy country.
Yeah, well, if you find out, can you let us know?
Well, it depresses, it perplexes us, and you know, look at the issues that you raise every Sunday.
Okay, sure.
Today it's about the disparity in wealth. You know, for the richest country in the world to have such high levels of poverty, such poor education systems in a lot of it, your gun laws. But Canadians, when they read about the gun laws in America, we go nuts. We just think, how can a society as advanced as that of the United States be so lax? And, you know, it all goes back to the Constitution, and I know.
Well, Tony, you know, my wife and I were coming in from the airport tonight, and the first three stories, and I can't remember them all now, about Detroit, were all about shootings. This, there were one young man was killed and six wounded in a drive-by shooting.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, oh, I know, the first one was about this American who had been kidnapped in Mexico by these armed gangs, and talking about 72 bodies found in Mexico, and the State Department warning Americans not to travel on public transportation in northern Mexico, and the fact that a million Americans live there. But anyway, so then they flash on this Detroit story where there was this drive-by shooting, and then some guy popped out from behind the house with a automatic rifle and started shooting at these cars, and the cars were shooting back.
Oh, man.
And I'm thinking, wow, this is like Juarez. And this same thing's going to accrue here or happen here that is happening in Mexico. It's all because of drugs are illegal, both in Mexico, because this is all about essentially it's business. It's a business operation.
The losing drug war.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's wins for them because they make billions and billions, and they got to hire people to protect their business interests. Remember, the Godfather said it's only business.
I was going to say this is like what was the? Is it Tony Montana? Is that the guy from Scarface? The character?
Yeah.
Pacino. And where's he? You know, he's going to pop out at any moment.
But the other little thing that I think probably went by most listeners was when they described the shooting in Detroit with six people down, I think it was, is that the EMS didn't come. They didn't, the money's not there. The EMS probably was at an accident or something like
but
that.
But if you were in Birmingham.
These budget cuts that both the federal government and the state government are considering. You know, what kind of services are you going to have there?
None.
None.
We can't believe it, you know. I don't want to take up any more of your time.
Well, you know, Tony, you have
we're both with you on this.
Yeah, I know you're. I know you're going to have elections there in Canada for the prime minister, and I always tell people I'm willing to bet that 90% of the people in Michigan could not name the prime minister of Canada, and probably 98% of people in the whole United States couldn't. But that Harper, the prime minister, if he was in the United States, he'd probably be in the Democratic Party.
Yeah, and he's the conservative.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what's so weird.
That says it all right there.
Anyway, we as individuals, we love Americans. We've all got friends on the other side of the river. We've got relatives. But we look at your society in general, and we just throw up our hands in the air, and we say, you know, when is some kind of sense going to return to the politicians, the lawmakers.
Well, I'll tell you.
You are not alone.
You are not alone. Tony, thanks for making our show international. We appreciate it.
Thank you so
much. All right. Send us some email, folks. What happened to all our international listeners?
I got an email from Winston Smith, who writes in every once in a while, and said, do either of you have any insight into the psychology of those who vigorously defend the super rich, the ones who swell up and say, it's their money. What drives them?
You know, I've said this before. It's what they call concentration camp psychology.
Yeah.
Mentality.
It's
when you're faced with unrelenting aggression that you have no defense with whatsoever. Some people begin to identify with the people doing the damage.
That's what's going on here.
Yeah. 313-298-WRIF. Let's see. We mentioned earlier that the Republicans weren't just trying to strip workers of their rights and destroy middle-class standard of living, that they were also helping a little thought of minority, and that was people with one arm, and they were going to exempt them from the Maine anti-switchblade law.
Yeah, so, and we're talking about the state of Maine.
Yeah, the state of Maine. So here's Tanner in Ortonville. He's going to comment on that. Hi, Tanner. You're on the air.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're good.
Doing great, thanks.
You know, I'm just wondering, you know, what's the point of making a switchblade illegal when the single hand opening with the little knob on them or the spring assisted are as fast or faster than a switchblade?
Is that right?
Yeah.
And they're not illegal?
No, not as far as I know.
I thought they were like, you know, gravity knives, stuff like that. I thought all of that fast opening knives were illegal. But, you know, that sounds like something from, like, the 1950s, you know.
Yeah, but
when you're a jet, you're a jet for all times, you know, East Side Story kind of stuff.
Well, my question is, who is there to dictate who can defend themselves, when and how forcefully, if possibly someone were to come at you with a knife? Because I'm under the influence of, I'm sorry.
Well, you know, what I was getting at is, I mean, that was the sign of gangs in the 1950s. It was these, you know, gangs, and it was also often very frequently thought of as minority gangs, particularly Hispanic, but also African-American gangs, that they were the ones that would cut people up.
Right, they'll cut you.
So they made those illegal. I don't think I'm particularly opposed to it. I don't think anybody's been hurt by
that. But if you have one arm.
Yeah. But I'm just wondering what in the world would these Republicans be thinking? Okay, we want to strip the unions of their bargaining rights. We want to make the ultra wealthy richer, and we want to allow one-armed people to carry switchblades. I mean, there's not a lot of one-armed people around. First off, and secondly, of all the one-armed people,
drummer for Def Leppard.
Yeah, that's right. But how many? How many of them are, like, interested in carrying a switchblade?
That is so ridiculous.
I don't get it. All right. Thank you, Tanner. Thank you very much. I don't know.
Boggles the mind.
I don't get it. Here's Bill. Bill's in Roseville. Bill, thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. You are on the air.
It's a pleasure, sir. Thank you.
Yeah.
I was calling you asked for the comment about why we shouldn't take the $17 billion or whatever from Michael Bloomberg there in New York.
Yeah.
Let me just remind people, Bill, what we're talking about. I said that there is so much money parked that is not circulating within the system, both corporations and individual rich people, that somebody like Mayor Michael Bloomberg of New York, that it would be, I think, make financial sense and hurt absolutely no one, including Bloomberg, to confiscate like $17.5 billion from his $18 billion fortune, leave him with $500 million so he wouldn't be hurt financially in the slightest, and that would take, you know, and then they wouldn't have to close firehouses in New York City. So I'm sorry. Go ahead, Bill.
Yep, great. You know, I look at it as that number's relative. Yeah, right now, you know. Of course, from me and your perspective and most of the listening audience, I'm going to assume $1 billion is going to be like, wow, you know. But, yeah, you know, when you start, okay, that's fine if it were a one-time thing, but then, okay, the money's going to run out. Boom. Then there's going to be someone that goes, well, this person makes $2 million and that money runs out. And then you start that slippery slope.
Oh, you might start getting down to the 50,000ers and start.
Exactly.
Ah. I mean,
well, how about a different scenario would be that if instead of so much wealth, somewhere or other, I thought of the Fortune 400 billionaires, the combined total of the 400 richest Americans is, I can't read my own writing, 400 riches is something, you know, like a trillion something. Well, that's a big cushion. And the idea also, Bill, would be that if you took this $17.5 billion, didn't have to lay off New York firefighters, but instead hired more or used it for other parts of the services that governments should rightly perform, that you'd have more people working. And what would those folks do? They would go buy things.
Yes, they would.
All right, we got to go.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Jalene will be taking more of your calls right after this.
It's amazing how great your home looks with new carpet or flooring, especially when you get an amazing value from a company you trust. That's why you should call Sears Flooring. With Sears Flooring, you'll save 20% right now. Just call 1-888-491-3939, and Sears Flooring will bring the showroom to you. Sears has a wide range of carpet, tile, hardwood, or laminate to match your style and budget. Your new flooring will be precisely installed, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. So call Sears Flooring for a free in-home consultation. You'll save 20%. Call 1-888-491-3939. Hurry. Offer ends soon. Not available in all areas. Installation provided by Sears Authorized Licensed Contractors. License information available upon request. Call Sears Flooring now and save 20%. Call 1-888-491-3939. 1-888-491-3939. Sears. Don't just dream about a brighter future. Go for it. If you want to pursue a career involving technology, look to a leader in technology education, ITT Technical Institute. ITT Tech offers career-focused programs in electronics technology, information technology, and drafting and design. Call 800-741-5123. You can develop knowledge and skills that you can use to pursue opportunities in a variety of career fields. ITT Tech's programs are designed to give you practical, real-world experience. Classes and day or evening courses meet just a few days each week. Career services are available for students and graduates, and financial aid is available for those who qualify. Would a career involving technology make your dreams come true? Call ITT Tech right now for more information. Call 800-741-5123. 800-741-5123. That's 800-741-5123.
Hello?
Hi, I'm calling about the two-bedroom apartment you advertised. Is it still available?
Sure.
Great.
Unless you're black or Latino or disabled.
Housing discrimination is rarely this obvious, but it's just as real and just as illegal. So if you hear things like,
I can't assign you a handicap parking space,
that could be housing discrimination. The only way to stop it is to report it so we can investigate it. Visit hud.gov/fairhousing or call HUD's Housing Discrimination Hotline at 1-800-669-9777. A message from HUD in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit. We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
All right, thank you very much, and welcome back. It occurs to me I have worse than usual about not finishing my thoughts.
Hey, we're all over the place here.
We are. I was saying at the beginning of this broadcast tonight that there was this great outpouring of popular protest against the attacks on the middle class, the working class, that the Republicans are trying to carry out, both in Congress. That, and I was saying, there is not a deficit crisis. There's a deficit problem that could easily be solved by...
Well, there's better ways than what these...
Yeah, proper taxation of the ultra-wealthy, that they have profited greatly at the expense of ordinary people. They themselves created this problem, and they ought to be the ones to pay for it. So there were hundreds of rallies and teach-ins last Monday on the anniversary of the assassination of Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., and they were called We Are One rallies, and there was one here in Detroit, of which I took part in, a number of other people did. You can go to our Facebook page.
Yes.
Just nightcall/Facebook, and we want more friends. Hook on. There's a lot of things going on there.
Come on along.
And
there's some photos of...
Of that demonstration.
That day, yeah.
And so my train of thought is beginning to drift.
And see, this is why. You can never just quit trying.
Oh, I know.
You get it all in by the end of the show, usually.
So remember I was saying I couldn't tell how many people were there. There were thousands. Maybe,
here in Detroit.
Maybe 3,000, maybe only 2,000, maybe only 1,500. And we just talked about this and talked about this last week. And I got to tell you, in a metropolitan area of 6 million people, where 90% of the people are going to be impacted negatively by what Governor Snyder is doing, by what the Republicans are planning for all these cutbacks that continue to have the average people pay for the mistakes of the wealthy paying less and less and less. And the fact that there was, even if there was 3,000 there, I mean, why there wasn't 30,000, why the hell there wasn't 300,000 there is so far beyond me.
Oh, it's so sad, Peter. I just really think it's for some people to get there to that protest, whatever protest it is, it takes things to be so bad.
Well, yeah, and I got to tell you, folks, it's not like Reverend Pete saying, and how come I didn't see you in church on Sunday?
No.
I'm not talking about saving your soul, although all of this activity, if you've ever been to any of this, is actually excellent for the soul.
Sure is.
And for the spirit, and for everything else. That's
a little addictive.
Yeah, that makes human beings feel really good about possibilities. I mean, that's what I think is so important. But that just a basic self-interest. Remember, I think I said last week, an organism, a healthy organism reflexively defends itself. Because if I start to go towards your nose, your hand comes up, you don't think, oh, Peter's about to punch me in the nose. What can I do? Well, I better put my left hand up, and I'll do that by raising my shoulder, then raising my elbow, then raising my wrist, and putting my hand. It's built into our genetic structure to just go up there.
It's kind of like when that cranky man came up to us when we were at the protest.
Oh, man, up in Lansing.
Yeah, and his hand came, you know, frighteningly close to my face when he was just going on and on.
I can't even say on radio what you said to that man.
Oh, I was so mad. I told him he needed to get the... Yeah, out of my face now.
Yeah, yeah. He was some crazy right
winger. He was crazy.
This was a rally, maybe about 5,000 union people. The other thought I didn't finish. I said, you know, union people, and people saying, well, union's this, union's that. Who else is going to lead this struggle? I mean, if you don't like unions and you say, for whatever reason, but geez, I'm still getting screwed pretty badly. My neighbors and maybe me are losing my house. Mm-hmm. I used to make $47,000 a year, and now I'm making $22,000 and all of that. If you're going to reflexively defend yourself and you don't like unions, you better figure out some other way, and I'd be all for that. Because most people don't belong to unions. And but the thing is that unions, because they're organized, because they have experience, they can lead this fight back against what is attempted to be done to us.
They really do have a process down pat of organizing.
And if you don't like it,
that people can learn from.
There's like some of these libertarian people. I mean, by the way, I also said earlier in the broadcast that I just came back from New York City, and I went to an anti-war rally in Union Square, and there were these libertarians there, and they were get rid of the Fed. They were on their
were
little
these
hobby.
The don't tread on me types.
Well, they were saying they were all opposed to the military-industrial complex, to U.S. out of Iraq and Afghanistan. So they were consistent.
How about my uterus? Are they going to stay out of my uterus?
What?
I'm just going back to this budget stalemate.
You know what?
Planned Parenthood.
You've got a... I mean, there's a lot of people just started fiddling with their rate to make sure that the thing is adjusted.
Did she just say uterus?
Tell them what you mean by
that.
Okay.
What I mean is... What I mean...
That was sort of shorthand. Here's the longhand, so to speak.
That I would like the government to stay out of anything to do with my reproductive rights, because they are my reproductive rights. Stay out of my uterus.
Yeah, and there used to be, back in the day, U.S. out of Vietnam, or these days, U.S. out of Iraq, U.S. out of Afghanistan.
Uh-huh.
People that support the right of women to choose that say, that, the right-wingers want the government out of everything except for a woman's right to choose.
I know,
right?
Amazing.
But then it's, U.S. out of my uterus.
Yes, you don't
That's
have one.
That's a quote. I don't have one. I don't want one.
There's right. plenty. There's plenty.
Let's go back. Whoa! Chris from Troy, my apologies. We've been
Peter.
You've been hanging for a long time. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, there's... what about the union members that make $10 to $40 million a year? You guys never talk about them.
Wait. Union guys make $10 to $40 million.
$40 million a year.
Tell me about it.
Matthew Stafford.
I don't know who that is. I you'd have to.
A Detroit Lion quarterback.
Oh
my gosh.
Right. What about the SAG, the Screen Actor Guild members? What about the American Federation of Television and Radio Artists workers, my union, that make more than that sometimes, right?
That guy from the Today Show.
All right, so people people in the entertainment, sports entertainment, are a real anomaly, and maybe, I don't know, I can't even imagine.
Think of the small percentage.
Yeah, make up a pretty half.
And, people.
And most of them, like the Green Bay Packers, were all down with the demonstrators and the union people in Madison, and certainly, the way the right wing attacks Hollywood, it's because all of these millionaires out there are so supportive of the left and liberals and civil liberties and civil rights and all that. But what does one thing have to do with another? I think, by the way, I don't, if those people have the kind of accumulated wealth that's not being circulated within the economy, I certainly would support the same sort of confiscation of their wealth as the guys in the CEOs. Sure.
All right. Think about this. So we here in Detroit go watch a movie that Jack Nicholson is in. He gets paid $100 million to make a movie. We go spend $12 on a ticket to watch his movie, and he's probably driving a Prius. And so, you see what I'm saying?
It's like DiCaprio.
Well, I don't really see my... I mean, I just see... Actually, what I hear is cynicism.
Well, and one more thing, though. Yeah. Tony from Canada brought it up. The right to bear arms in the United States.
Yeah.
That law was written when it was a single-shot musket.
Okay.
It should have stayed that way. If people want to bear arms, it should be a single-shot musket, not an AK-47.
Chris, you sound like some kind of commie to me.
Does that sound like a commie?
No.
He's being facetious.
I'm kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, all right.
I'm for the single shot musket.
Yeah.
I'm down with you.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate it.
I mean, you're not even supposed to have an AK-47 to start with.
Yeah, a lot of my, well, as long as it's semi-automatic, it's okay.
Ooh, okay. Yeah. There is a difference.
A lot of my union, fellow union members are making more than I am.
What? They are?
Well, yeah. Some of, you know, the AFTRA members and SAG members, Screen Actors Guild, make a lot of money.
Oh, okay. I thought we were on the gun thing. Okay.
Oh, yeah, the gun thing. Right.
Okay. I thought you said pack more than I do.
Here is Rich. Rich is in Pittsburgh. Hi, Rich. You're on the air.
Hey, Pete. Hey, Julian. How you doing?
Hi. What's happening,
Rich? Hey, great.
Hi. I'm doing good. I was actually calling in. You had talked about the We Are One rallies this past
Monday.
This past week. Yeah, and I was at the one in Pittsburgh, so I just wanted to – I was interested to hear what you had to say about yours, so that's what made me call in, and I wanted to talk a little bit about what happened in Pittsburgh.
Yeah,
sure, tell us. And I don't know if I said, Rich is calling from Pittsburgh, so go ahead.
Yeah, it was a really good rally, and it was, you know, the turnout at the rally was great. We had about 1,000 or so folks, mostly union folks, but it was an interesting mix of, like, environmental and community organizations. And the target for the protest was, like, a lot of it was kind of locally, around local and statewide issues. The first target was equitable gas. And I don't know if you've seen the movie Gasland, but they're starting to drill Marcellus Shale in the state of Pennsylvania, and Corbett, who's the new governor, the new Republican governor, is not taxing it, which is creating a major deficit problem.
Wait, well, let me just interrupt you 1 second, Rich. Let me tell
Gasland. I got to see that.
I appreciate that you're trying to be brief, but I should tell people that this process of drilling for gas with a natural gas with a process called fracking, where
fracking.
What did I say?
Fracking.
Okay.
It's fracking. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah, which shoves all these chemicals into the earth and is doing incredible damage, including creating earthquakes in Arkansas. So, but go ahead.
It's
an environmental mess.
And Gasland. Gasland is
a documentary
about it. If you have Comcast on demand, it's on there.
You can get it. Okay.
Yeah. Go ahead, at least for a while.
Yeah, and Pennsylvania is, I believe, the only state that does not tax or regulate this process as of now. And it's one of those things where it's amazing. If you look at what the state of Pennsylvania could get from the taxation, and you look at the budget shortfall, it matches up pretty closely, you know. And it's one of those things where, like, at the same time, they're like, now that all the schools have to take 15% pay cuts or 15% budget cuts, and they're laying off state nurses and a whole variety of
police,
state
fire
employees. Yeah, exactly. You know, and you know, they haven't gone after the unions in the same way they did in Wisconsin, but it's almost as bad. And the thing is, like, you know, the thing that was positive was, like, you just saw lots of union members and lots of groups which maybe aren't always the easiest of allies, environmental and labor and the whole bit, standing together. Again, going after these gas companies, and then we marched to Corbett's office in Pittsburgh, the capital's in Harrisburg, but Corbett has an office in Pittsburgh, marched there. And it was a very energetic rally. I mean, I was feeling, unfortunately, in my heart of hearts, I like to believe that it's not true that things have to get really bad before people react, but sometimes I do think that that's what happens.
Got done saying that too.
Yeah, you know, Rich, I'll just go back to what I said. You tell me there's 1,000 people marching in Pittsburgh, and some people would tell me if 300,000 people turned out in Detroit, I'd say, I don't understand why there's not 500,000.
That's never enough.
But I still don't understand why there are not more people, why people don't understand the gravity of what we're all facing and how the same incompetence that ran us into the ground in the first place are now turning the knife all the more. Well, thanks for the report from Pittsburgh, Rich. Appreciate it.
You listening.
And thank you for listening. And let's go to Shane. Shane's in Clarkston, still talking about this Maine law the Republicans put forth that would allow one-armed people to have switchblade knives. What do you think, Shane? You're on the air.
Hi, how you doing? My name's Shane. I think the law is kind of silly, personally, because you can have a law or a knife that you flick a little lever on the back,
yeah,
flips open within you know, fractions of a second. Now, I am not against carrying a knife. I carry a Swiss Army knife. I have never personally thought of it as a defense weapon, but...
No.
But
you pick your teeth with them. You file your nails. Yeah, go ahead.
You open packages.
Yeah.
You can, but I'm also a firearms collector. Now, this is, sorry to get off track, but the AK-47, sure, fine. I understand. You can buy that. It is a semi-automatic rifle. There are countless amounts of semi-automatic rifles, and it gets a bad rap because it's cheaply produced, the stamped rifle. It can be made for under $10 and be semi-accurate.
And you can also get kits to convert it to fully automatic.
Nice.
Not without a Class 3 and not in Michigan.
Let's go back to the knife thing, though. Are the knives you described legal? I thought you had, for one thing, I thought knives
it's
couldn't...
under so many inches.
Yeah, I thought you couldn't have a knife that was more than 3 inches.
Three and a half.
Well, let me just read you something, Shane, that John from Inkster asks, what's a one-armed person going to do with a switchblade? You need two hands to close it.
No, you can put it like
on your
thigh.
I know, that's crazy.
Right, yeah. Oh, I totally understand that, but why would an one-armed person wear a sheath on their belt with a 3.5-inch blade and a 4-inch handle?
There you go. I don't know, but I mean...
We're laughing because it's like the craziest headline.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it is.
In the midst of everything that's going on, these cats in Maine are worried about one-armed folks.
Well, you know what? Being able to protect themselves with... But you know where...
How about mace?
You know... You
just clip that little thing up. You can do it with one hand.
You know where most people wind up to lose a limb is industrial accidents.
True,
of course.
Yeah, so
and again,
worker safety.
And this is so many of them are preventable. And this is one of the things that the Republicans want to do. They want to attack OSHA, the Office of Safety Health Administration, because a lot of businesses don't like it. They want, you know, got to make reports and they got to have safe equipment. In the meantime,
they get fined.
Workers are losing limbs.
Yeah.
Nut job Republicans in Maine want to at least allow them to carry switchblades. All right. Thank you, Shane. Thanks for the info. 313-298-WRIF. Here is Mike. Mike's in Lincoln Park. Go ahead, Mike. You're on the air.
Hey, Pete, Julene.
Hi.
Hello.
Yeah, I was wanting to call you. I went to downtown Detroit there Monday.
Great.
My first rally ever. I was definitely inspired by it, man.
Isn't it amazing?
I was, like, on a permanent high all day because I went to work after that, worked till like, 3 in the morning. Tried telling these people at work what it was like, and they just don't understand. They don't get it at all. And how do you explain it to these people?
It's tough to explain. They just have to go.
They probably think, it's like somebody says, you got to come to my church because when they preach the word of the Lord, you just...
You can wear your jeans and they play music.
But it is inspiring. And I'll tell you, Mike, you're much like many of the people that that Jalene and I saw up in Lansing when there were the big protests there against Governor Snyder's attack on workers. And certainly you saw the intense energy and the level of emotional connection
camaraderie
that people have is absolutely
nothing
amazing.
Like it. I know that high you're talking about,
but
Mike.
Let me ask you this, Mike. Did you hear about it on this show?
Yes, I did.
Well, where the hell were the other tens of thousands of people that are listening to this? What? How come they didn't?
I don't get that either. But what was great for me was I was there at 4 o'clock and hooked up with your guys' union members right there on the corner in front of the Federal Building.
Oh, yeah.
And it just started out with just like about 30, 40 people. And I'm standing, because I've never been at one before, I'm just standing there, this can't be it, you know?
Yeah.
So then I think it was about 5 o'clock. There was probably maybe, I don't know, I'm bad at estimating people sizes, but maybe 100 people there or something, a couple hundred maybe. And we started marching down to where everybody was meeting. And as we're walking down, they're marching, and everybody doing their chants, and people beeping their horns. There was, I mean, like 9 out of 10 cars, it seemed like, they were beeping their horns in favor of us.
That's right.
And then different groups of people, I didn't know that until that day, that were coming from different areas. And I'm going, wow, there's another couple hundred more people. And it was just so, I'm like goosebumps right now thinking about it again.
That's great.
Well, I'll tell you
I'm so glad you went.
And you said you're not a member of the union?
not anymore. No.
Yeah, and you don't have to be. But one of the things...
But he was.
And I don't know how many people actually can do this, but... And if someone wants to write me at calltalkyes@yahoo.com or get a hold of me some other way, there are, for instance, a lot of videos available that are incredible, that are, I mean, I hate to use the word enjoyable. What can I say? That they're eye-opening. Mm-hmm. And it's the kind of thing that individuals could say, hey, neighbors or family, how many, come on over. I mean, if you have two people, if you're at your house and just two other people
Why
are watching
not?
A video.
It's one more person who's seen it.
Right. Or, you know, maybe you can get 10. Or if you, you know, a community center or a church or, you know, a school or something like that. So the vast majority of us are not in unions. In fact, now.
I'm not.
Yeah. And so the unions can oftentimes provide the organizing leadership for fight backs against repression.
Like a template
like they're
of
doing.
Sorts.
But ultimately, unless this becomes like the late 30s and there's this mass organizing drive, which there's some of it going on, is that we're going to be moving along without people that are, like yourself, Mike, that aren't involved directly as union members now.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I hope we get a lot more of us out there.
Okay, well, as I said,
me too.
If there was 300,000 people in downtown Detroit last Monday, I would wonder why the hell there wasn't 500,000. And if there was 500,000, I'd say, why isn't there a general strike? All right, Mike, solidarity, brother.
You do say that at every single protest.
Yeah. All right. Let's see. 313-298-WRIF. Here is Jason Warren. Go ahead, Jay. You're on the air.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're doing great. Thanks
how
for calling
you,
in.
I was calling about the military losing their pay.
What happened?
Well, it's a possibility
if the budget hadn't
been passed. Yeah, that's a great topic.
Oh, I just got done looking at my pay stub a couple hours ago. And, you know, it shows on there a debt payment, you know, of X amount of dollars, which is like, you know, it's what they said. It's about a week's worth of owage. And I talked to my aunt and uncle, and they're both in the military also, and it happened to them, too.
We're not understanding. What is this?
As in, they took the money from us. You know, we get paid on the
right.
1st and the 15th of the month, and they took it. Now, I thought the government didn't do the whole shutdown.
They didn't. The last time that happened, when the Republicans shut down the government in 1994, the military didn't get paid, but then when it got up and running again, everybody got their money. So,
it's as if they were ready for it
something.
That's weird.
Say, Jay, I didn't.
Are you sure?
I'm at a loss.
Yeah.
Yeah, or, yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that, they had stripped us a week's worth of pay already.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that doesn't fly.
That's terrible.
Yeah. I'm sorry to hear that. Hopefully it will come back at you.
I mean, what is it? Hey, support the troops.
Yeah.
Your own government's not supporting you.
Thank you, Jay. Appreciate it. I hope that works out.
Every right to be mad.
You know, about 4 or 5 months ago, I said to Jalene, and Jalene agreed that we weren't going to keep talking. And I'll even will say her name now. Sarah Palin. Remember her? Remember her? She was the governor.
She
was this quitter. This governor was, and then she ran for vice. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean,
her.
She is so history. When's the last time you heard about her?
I heard something about her running for governor Senate in Arizona.
Oh, that's right. That was weeks ago.
I've heard about Bristol, though.
Bristol. Yeah, that's what doing the Bristol stomp.
She made $262,500 last year. And
doing what?
Raising awareness for teen pregnancy prevention.
She's pregnant again?
No.
I mean, there's something
disgusting.
There's something really sick. She goes up.
Man. She gets knocked up at 17.
Is that Levi Johnson?
Yeah.
He's the guy. Whatever happened to his mom that was facing OxyContin charges?
She was selling Oxy, and I don't know. These people are just so.
Yeah. Repulsive. Anyway, so Bristol.
She made $263,000, and in compensation, yeah.
That's so weird. You know, they've got the right wing. They pull out these people. They have any number of women speakers who had abortions, and then go around saying how sorry they were.
Oh yeah, and how they regret it.
They regret it.
That whole
abortion
thing.
Yeah, well.
Yeah, well, it's amazing that she's rewarded. She's the only teen mother, other than those stupid shows on MTV called Teen Mom or whatever, who has made loads of money by having a baby out of wedlock and still in high school.
Well, did I say this last week about this real nut job, Michelle Bachmann?
Oh, yeah. She's
this congresswoman,
she's a real
teabagger.
Minnesota, right?
They say that,
is that where she's from?
Yeah, from Minnesota. Yeah. Sarah Palin is the thinking man's Michelle Bachmann. Though maybe I didn't say it last week. I heard that.
Oh, my gosh.
That may have been
Bill
Maher.
Yeah, he's good.
All right, 313-298-WRIF. Let's see. Here is William in Redford. William, hi. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning. Good morning. One thing, the numbers here in Michigan are showing that the unemployment numbers are at a standstill or going down. Do you guys think it's because there's nobody else to be laid off? And also, I kind of think that it's amazing how the Republican Party was able to pull in people, you know, who are of a, you know, maybe lower educated but highly spirited people,
mm-hmm.
a.k.a. teabaggers, to their side, and now they're finding out that they're going to get screwed, too. I mean, it's amazing how they was able to do this.
Well, you know what, William? I don't know
if it really is.
When they've done these, I don't know what you call these, studies or polls of the teabaggers, people that members of the Tea Party, they actually tend to be upper middle class, not an above, but mostly middle and upper middle class. I mean, there are working class people. There are even some poor people that buy into that. But by and large, it actually is the traditional social base of fascism. I mean, that's who supported every fascist movement in Europe, was this kind of middle class, upper middle class, who saw their standard of living being eroded, and rather than turning on the masters, which they don't have the psychoanalytic courage to do, they turn on the people below them. So they come up with, the disdain for the poor, racism, the desire for military conquest, you know, all this crap that ruins the nation.
Do you guys think that it's kind of late in the game to do all this protesting and marching and everything?
Never.
It's kind of late in the game for that right now.
Well,
no, I never.
William? I mean, you know what my option?
I'm not going to put my hands in the air.
I don't know how much you get a chance to listen to the show, but my two options are always either that we either got to fight back or we got to all thatch our roofs, admit we're peasants, and ask the lords of the land and finance to please, sir. Don't kill everything so fast.
We just need our pitchforks.
Are the pitchforks and torches? We'll meet down in the city square. Thank you, William.
Good questions, right. William. Thanks
yeah,
for calling.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Appreciate it. And that's it. Well, people don't necessarily listen sequentially, but another thing I said at the beginning of the show, I kind of understood. This is not a highly politicized country. There is, I don't know where I have that piece.
Which is a funny sentence. It sounds funny, especially considering everything that's going on now and all the wackadoodles that have decided to be political.
Yeah. Well, it's still, I think it's unfortunately a minority of people on both sides. It's really a minority among the right. The teabaggers, financed by the ultra-wealthy billionaires like the Koch brothers, on one side, and then these people that are us's that are finally beginning to realize how badly we've been screwed and we're, you know, what happened was, beginning in 1980 with Reaganomics and the attack on the standard of living in the middle class and the gains of the union movement that brought a middle class standard of living to the working class, as that began to erode and Reagan did it right from the beginning. I mean, he had this union of dopes, the airline pilots, Patco, and he destroyed their union.
Yeah, man.
I mean, talk about, not getting it, but so it's been downhill for the middle class and the working class since then. The poor are always screwed. I mean, that's, the understanding, I don't know how great it is, but the activism is fairly low. Now, in Wisconsin, most of you have seen how, you know, that they think at one point there may have been as many as 125,000, no lower than 80,000 people showing up in Madison. Ordinary working people, teachers and firefighters and cops and sanitation workers and all of that. Yet, there was an election on Tuesday, and it was for Supreme Court Justice of Wisconsin. There was this far right-wing conservative.
Character.
Yeah, that was expected to be a shoo-in. And the liberal candidate won out of, I think it was like 1,400,000 votes by 200 votes.
It was so close.
It was so close.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, what a squeaker. And then it turned out, you know how, what percentage of the registered voters voted?
What?
30%.
Still that low.
Yeah.
My God.
And I thought,
that's about average.
And you know what they expected? 20%.
Oh,
so,
that's
so
pathetic.
10% more people voted, and that...
And it made that much of a difference.
Yeah, that made much that much of a difference.
Well, listen up.
And I always talk about voting being this fairly passive action, and that we, you know, almost, you know, come when called. Okay, you know, you
today's
can...
Today's the day.
Yeah, you can just, you know, you just work and consume for 4 years, and okay, it's November, you got to go
yeah.
vote. Well, these folks did both. I mean, they mobilized this mass movement, and then in order to defend themselves throughout this guy that was going to vote with the Koch brothers, with the billionaires, with the people that
they're
are trying to destroy the middle class.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. So there's still not the deep understanding that's present in other societies of what's going on here. And I don't know what it'll take.
I don't either. I you know, but I will not throw up my hands, like I said.
Yeah. And again, it's not, I'm not saying how come you weren't in church.
Yeah, you're not
on Sunday.
Scolding.
I'm talking that we need to defend ourselves as a people, and we're not doing it well enough. There's class war going on, folks, and we are the collateral damage. We do not have an army mobilized to take on these people that are well-funded, that have so much of the media on their side.
We're not talking about having guns
no,
or
no,
anything
no, no,
like that.
No, no.
You made it sound kind of... Don't militarize it, Peter.
N-O. Negatory.
Big N-O.
Yeah, the big N-O. All right, I want to get some more calls on the air. Ed wants to talk about switchblades and unions, and Mike wants to talk about gun control. Brad
okay.
wants to talk about single-shot muskets.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And let's see, Kevin wants to talk about Paul Ryan. He's the guy who is this rising star in the Republican Party that has put forth...
In Michigan?
In the national.
Oh, this is the national guy.
Congress.
There's another one who has a similar name in Michigan.
Yes.
Yes.
Ryan's a very common name.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jolene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
We know you love to save money. That's why we know you'll love MotorCityDailyDeal.com. Each weekday, MotorCityDailyDeal.com sends an unbelievable deal right to your inbox. We're working with local businesses to make sure these deals save you 50 to 85% off. Restaurants, salons, spas, events, and more. You get incredible deals from great local businesses like these.
The new U Body Wraps and Wellness in Utica. Plymouth Nursery and Garden Center in Plymouth. Gator Jake's in Sterling Heights, Capelli Salon and Spa in Rochester, and Electric Elephant Tattoos in Fairhaven.
And these deals are so good, they're only available for 24 hours. That's right, just 24 hours, then they're gone. MotorCityDailyDeal.com. It's your new local way to save on all the cool things you love to eat, see, and do. Log on, sign up, and save with MotorCityDailyDeal.com. That's MotorCityDailyDeal.com. MotorCityDailyDeal.com.
Homeowners, the mortgage market is starting to move, but the good news is rates are still incredibly low. Don't miss this opportunity to refinance your mortgage. Call Quicken Loans at 888-249-1425. Quicken Loans is America's home loan experts, closing 1 million home loans over 25 years. And recently, J.D. Power & Associates ranked Quicken Loans highest in customer satisfaction in primary mortgage origination. Find out how quick and easy it is to refinance refinance with Quicken Loans. Call right now for a free rate quote and see how much Quicken Loans can lower your monthly payment. Call 888-249-1425. That's 888-249-1425. For J.D. Power and Associates award information, visit jdpower.com. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. Nationwide mortgage licensing system number 3030. That's Quicken Loans. 888-249-1425. 888-249-1425.
How much are you paying to invest in stocks? Keep your costs low with a ShareBuilder account from INT Direct. Unlike many other online brokerages, ShareBuilder has no account or investment minimums, so you can get started with any amount. And if you text right now, you can get a $50 account bonus after your first investment. Just text the word money to 42330. With ShareBuilder, you can open your account and keep it open with any amount. Text right now to get a $50 account bonus. Just text the word money to 42330 and get more information about this great offer from ShareBuilder. Some restrictions apply. Text the word money to 42330. That's 42330. Message and data rates may apply. Securities products are not FDIC insured, not bank guaranteed, and may lose value, and are offered by ShareBuilder Securities Corporation, a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC. ShareBuilder Securities Corporation is a subsidiary of ING Bank, FSB.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan.
All right, thank you very much. This is our fourth and final segment.
It's been a long day for
both
of us.
Yeah, it has. I just flew in from New York and got my arms are tired.
Oh, God, Peter. That's bad.
You never heard that?
Yeah, I've heard it. It's
about
bad.
About 2000 it is. And,
well, I laugh at all your silly jokes.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. I can't imagine what you'd say. Never mind.
No,
anyway, I got a couple of my favorite interviews that I'm replaying. One on insomnia. And this is perfect, isn't it? A lot of you are probably up. Because
that's
you can't
me.
Sleep.
Yeah. That's
so,
me.
Well, at 1 a.m., this extraordinarily interesting interview I recorded a couple of years ago. The book is called Insomniac.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And on another one that I did, a guy that wrote a novel about Che Guevara.
Cool. I remember this one. Yeah.
So they're both a couple of faves of mine. So I put them, you know, I didn't do any new ones because I wanted to get out and get to New York.
Well, you know, you're a jet setter. No,
I am.
Not really.
Yeah. There's, what did somebody call in one time? He said, yeah, you're the big environmentalist, and you go flying all over
all
the world.
All that jet fuel.
With all that jet fuel. I said, hey, man, gone with or without me.
You gotta get out once in a while.
Here's some good news. For the first time in nearly a decade of polling, a majority of Americans say they are in favor of same-sex marriage, according to a survey released. 53% of Americans support gay marriage, up more than 20 percentage points from a low of 32% in 2004. What was going on in 2004?
Wait, let's see. Wait, war?
Republicans. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, you know, George Bush was one of the weird characters. He didn't have any problem with gays.
He was okay with civil unions, wasn't
yeah,
he?
Yeah, but they had that insane vice president. Speaking about people that you don't think about.
Oh, Darth Cheney.
Darth Cheney, yeah.
What a
dick.
He really is.
And things going down the other way. The Republicans in South Carolina has signed a bill that makes the state the first to require women who are seeking abortions to first attend a consultation at pregnancy help centers. So this is now women
so
that want
to. So this is them, therefore, trying to convince them to not go through with it.
Yeah. A lot of states require counseling from doctors or other clinic staff members. But South Dakota's law is different in that it mandates counseling that will come from people whose central qualification is that they are opposed to abortion. And let's see, I thought there was one other part in here.
That sounds about right.
Well,
there are
people
guys.
With no medical training whatsoever. That's what I was trying to look
yeah,
for.
Yeah, it's all emotional, right?
Here's what I don't get. I mean, if abortion is, quote, murder, if abortion is taking a human life, mm-hmm. and this is a new concept in jurisprudence, I mean, or in other words, in the legal system. I mean, a human is a being that exits the mother's womb and can live on its own.
Outside, yes.
Yeah. As I always say, a fetus cannot own property, it cannot inherit wealth, it cannot... No one names a fetus. I mean, sometimes people say, oh, I'm going to call my baby.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, but anyway. Oh, yeah. So, but if it's murder across the board, right?
Yeah,
it would be.
Sure.
But it makes exceptions, this law, for medical emergencies. Oh, but not for rape or incest. Okay, good.
Oh.
So they're being consistent.
Oh, God.
They're being consistent. I mean, they're totally insane. And, you know, here are these people. So what I always say, it's these male legislators making laws that are going to be enforced by the state, which means the police then have to take part of their time to enforce these laws. Police are mostly men, to stop women from doing something they've done since the beginning of time.
The war, it's a war on women.
It's a war on women, indeed. Okay.
Stay out of there.
Let's get back to some of these other calls. Here is Brad, and he is in West Bloomfield. Brad, thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. Peter and Jillian with you. You're on the air.
Good evening to you, Peter and Jillian. Another great show.
Thank you.
I've called a few times.
Thanks.
Actually, I have two things. You just mentioned the same-sex deal going on here. And, I figure it this way. I'm not really for it because I went out with a girl for 3 years and found out she was having the same sex with a buddy of mine that she was having with me. So I'm not big on the same sex deal. But,
same sex with the same, okay, with the same chick, too, guys.
I went by a store today in New York City that had this t-shirt store I went by. I was thinking about getting it. Oh, now I'm forgetting. What did it say?
Oh, no.
Never mind. I'll have to think about it. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Then you had a caller about 15, 20 minutes ago, about 15 or 20 minutes ago, talking about this right to bear arms. You know, first of all, I personally don't want to be somewhere where I have to worry about being armed in the first place.
Bad place to be.
You know, and, this fella's talking about the single-shot musket.
Right.
First of all, when it was written, it was arms was a much wider range than just the gun. There were people that carried, shaving straight-edge razors. There were people that carried knives back then. People that carried swords that they had from the wars. There's a lot more to that. My advice to this fella is, before he starts ranting and raving about the Constitution, he should teach himself how to read, and then read the Constitution, and then afterward maybe go out and get a fillet of fish.
Oh no! He just went that long.
That was a long one. That's called a shaggy dog story.
Yeah. Oh, it is.
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out this T-shirt. It was something about I'm a threesome minus two women or something like that.
A single guy? Lonely?
Yeah. Yeah. It was on a T-shirt. But it was funny the way it was formulated. I can't remember. And there was another one that said, a T-shirt that said, I thought you were dead.
What?
I mean, you would wear that so some people...
I don't really get it.
That's New York. I don't know. 313-298-WRI.
I get New York.
Hey, if you've been trying to get in... during the night, we got open lines for you now. Here's Mike in Waterford. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're good.
Great. Hi.
Mine goes to the whole, the single-shot muskets thing.
Yeah.
Really?
When the Constitution was written, of course, there were, single-shot muskets, and like the guy mentioned, they carried other weapons. But, now they have the semi-automatic weapons and stuff like that. My question is also, when they wrote the Constitution, when they included the freedom of expression and freedom of the press, they only had it on the printing press. They didn't have wide media news like they do now. You can't just go and look on the internet or on TV and get, the news like you can. And with freedom of expression and stuff like that, you can't just go, now you can email someone, you could call them back. Then you had to go through a whole, send them a letter and go actually talk to them, and that was my thought on that.
Okay.
So, if you're going to, interpret it in that sense, I guess you have to, interpret it in the sense of, well, if they just meant this, then why don't we ban, NBC or whatever?
We'll think about that.
Yeah.
All right.
Give that some thought.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks for calling.
Here is an ill-informed message. I like to say that this guy gets so mad at me. Ron Paul Rick at East Point, he says, the people who make that peaceful revolution impossible, oh, well, he has a Kennedy. I was going to skip that, but I guess it's part of the message from John Kennedy. Those who make peaceful revolution impossible will make violent revolution inevitable. And what that means, essentially, if you block peaceful reforms, well, people then turn to violence as a way to carry it out. I mean, where did that happen? Oh, yeah, the U.S.
Yeah.
That's how we got going. And so Ron Paul Rick says the people who make that peaceful revolution impossible will be the federal government. It makes no sense.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Well, I know what he means. I mean, sometimes he knows what he's talking about, but then he gets into that real wacky, the government's trying to take away our guns. I mean, this is the most heavily armed country in the world.
That's not going to change.
How can there ever be a revolution in America if all its regular folks have BB guns? Yeah, don't hold your breath waiting for an intellectual revolution. Well, you're right. I mean, hey, I gotta say, Rick, you're right. I mean, how can you have a revolution in a modern state without an armed population? Oh, yeah. They did it in Tunisia, didn't they?
They sure did.
And they did it in Egypt, didn't they? Now, everybody was armed in Libya, and they're not doing so well.
What do you make of that?
Yeah. But anyway, nobody's talking about taking away anybody's... I mean, how can you both be a gun nut and a money nut, Rick? That's what I don't understand. I mean, actually, it goes together. It kind of goes together. I don't know. I think so. Anyway, let's get some more calls. Here is Ed. He's in Clinton Township. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, how you doing? This is dealing with the switchblades, make it short, and then the union.
Yeah.
When it comes to the switchblades, you know, it's a shame a lot of people don't understand that if you ever seen a person with one arm, you know, they're just like you, me. A lot of times, guys, we don't have a long knife. It's a small pocket knife. And even a lot of the women, my wife carries a small pocket knife in her purse. You may have a hangnail or sliver in your finger. A lot of times we have using our knife and pop the sliver out. If you want to cut a box real quick, you pull out of your pocket a small little knife. You think a one-arm guy doesn't need to do that at times? You ever try to open a knife with one hand?
Well, no.
Burned my fingers once, and you know, you had to use the one. It's definitely difficult.
I mean, I've got a pretty big toolbox at home with box cutters and saws and all that. It never occurs to me to carry it with me. In case I might get a sliver or something like that. I mean, a woman who, and all, and particularly in a society like this, it's such a violent society that...
Especially against women.
I was going to say, in fact, that's what I meant, that their desire to feel safe, no matter what they have to do with knives, mace, a gun, whatever. I mean, I'm not going to tell a woman, oh, you're going to be okay. 99% of men in this society are, going to be okay and don't need weaponry to transverse this society. Although, because of the presence of so many guns, it's getting to be a less and less safe place to be. I mean, are we going to wind up like Mexico? We're starting to see. I mean, we always talk about, you know, the right to bear arms because we think, oh, well, I mean, I want to have a gun in case somebody, you know, up in northern Macomb County tries to get into my SUV, I'll be able to
You wouldn't want to shoot them.
Well, but I think there's a lot of, I mean, the people that want to carry guns in order to forestall that do.
I mean, maybe to scare them away.
Nobody, I don't want anybody to take anything that's mine, you know, anything like, you know, so, I mean,
I mean, it does feel horrible. I've had my car broken into before.
I know. And I can imagine, like, carjacking. I mean, that's pretty bad.
Oh, God.
But when you have, that Representative Giffords in Arizona has been shot, something like 2,300 people more have died from gunshots. 10,000 people have been shot. So this is an absolutely violent society. And the introduction to more guns in more places, I think, just is going to increase more gun violence. All right. Thank you, Ed. Appreciate it. 3132. And I'm not talking about, there is no political will in this country whatsoever, certainly not from the Democrats, to take away anyone's guns.
Yeah, no worries.
I mean, these wimp-ass MFs don't even have the...
You are cool. You are set.
Yeah. Actually, I'm glad you talked over what I said, which is good.
Okay, sorry.
No, that's good. What I was saying was...
Okay, good.
I mean...
I saved your ass again.
Yeah. I mean, there was an assault weapons ban. you know, that, you know, who the hell needs an assault weapon?
For real.
Yeah. All right. And I want one. I'm, you know, a lot of you guys may want one. I'm not saying
just,
that.
Can't you go to the range and just shoot those for kicks?
Yeah.
Okay, well, just go get your, you know, rocks off that way.
Or just get these videos with these women in these little bikinis shooting.
Oh, yeah, the camouflage bikini.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Shooting, just
take it out that way. Get yourself a box of Kleenex and have a great time.
Can we move on? Here's Kevin in Detroit. Kevin, thanks for staying on the line. Welcome.
How you doing, Pete and Jolene?
We're good.
Great. Hi.
Did you read Nolan's Family article today?
I'm sorry. Why do you read that? Nolan Finley.
Hey, you're right. I don't know why I do it. You do, Pete.
It's a blood pressure raiser.
He said Paul Ryan is just a great leader and that people like Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama want to keep continuing the welfare state.
Yeah, well, of course he would say that.
Well, we have a massive welfare state, mostly that benefits the ultra wealthy and the corporations.
But what
corporate welfare.
Jim Wayne can explain this to me. Why do those individuals, let's say, make under $100,000 a year, try to defend the Republicans? I'm talking about making excuses for them. Don't Paul Ryan get government health care?
Sure. Better than you or me.
Yeah, but, I mean, you hear people, you know, the average Joe up there saying, well, he shouldn't get this Obamacare and all this other stuff.
Well, you know, when you start looking at these polls, Kevin, people increasingly are supportive of the health care. I mean, the Republicans tried to scare the crap out of everybody that this was going to do all this damage to people. Well, nobody has seen any damage, and people are beginning to see benefits from it. And that the fuller a government health plan there would be, the more that it would benefit people. And the more we could get private insurers out of it, the more we could get a handle on healthcare costs in general. I mean, I've got this kind of health insurance now where I pay like this, up to a certain point, the stuff out of pocket and the employer pays part of it and all that. And the costs that come in, like my wife, what did she? She had these, like allergy tests.
Yeah.
And suddenly we get this bill for $1,300. You know?
Did you have to pay it?
Well, they adjudicate. I think we had to pay like about $600.
Are you serious?
Yeah. I mean, it kind of works out. I think we're probably winding up paying maybe another $500 a year more than
before we
would have. But but one of the things, and essentially,
that's confusing.
These are health savings accounts, and this is what the Republicans want as a health plan, because what this would mean.
So they got it already?
No. This is just the private employer. I mean, this would mean, and they want to have a version of this for like Medicare. So this would give private insurers and the financial industry hundreds of billions of dollars of government money. I mean, these guys, these Republicans are frauds. I mean, they want to cut the legs out from under ordinary people and their benefits and what have you. But on the other hand, they want to utilize government to ensure that that private individuals and corporations are enriched. That's it.
Yep.
Kevin, I got to move along. Just got a few minutes more before our interviews. If you're up, we're going to be doing I'm going to be doing an interview on insomnia. That ought to do it, huh?
Maybe it'll help you.
Here's Jim in Clarkston. Go ahead, Jim. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. Hi, Jolene. How you doing?
Good. Hi.
Good. How you doing?
Good. Hey, listen, I'd just like to thank you for all your support during the Detroit newspaper strike.
Oh, sure.
Right on.
Yeah, okay. I was on the negotiating committee for the Detroit Media Partnership against Gannett.
Sure.
And they started off with a 12% pay cut. We after it all got whittled down, we went 17 hours the last day, and we got it down to a 6.5 and a 4.5 respectively. And I'm with the Pressman's Union and the mailers, and we had a meeting with Susie Elwood. She's the CEO of Detroit Media Partnership now.
Right, the news and the free press.
About 2 weeks after the negotiations, and I asked her at the meeting. I said, "Well, we've taken a 6.5 and a 4.5 respectively to what we make, and what has upper management done to make this company viable?" And she went back and forth. Well, we've got 2 weeks of furloughs we're going to take, which I understand they haven't taken yet. They haven't taken anything yet. So I asked her, I said, well, what percentage does that boil down to the percentage that we took, the 6.5 and the 4.5? I finally, after back and forth a couple of times, she finally come out with a percentage, 2%. I said, I looked at her, and I just turned around and walked away.
Well, I don't blame you, Jim, but here, and hear me out, I'm not being critical in the slightest. You are basing your approach to her and to work and to management and compensation and all that on the basis that most human beings do. And that's called fairness. And yet that phrase, that definition doesn't exist in their lexicon except as propaganda. Because what they are all involved in is sharp class warfare. They are involved in how do we distribute income the least fair. In other words, unions are a pain in the ass to them because they can't depend on the so-called free market of labor. Because if labor was sold on a free market, you and me and everybody else would be making $2.75 an hour if we were lucky. What we've done with our unions and helped everybody else that's working for a living is bid up the selling cost of labor. So it costs them more money. That's why they want to destroy all our unions. They don't give a damn about fairness. It's all about how it gets crazy. I mean, literally pathological on their part because, I mean, any sensible capitalist class, owner class, employing class, as you can see in some of like the Scandinavian countries knows that if you do it on a bit of fairness, you know, you still make a lot of money for Richie Rich Kid and the corporations and all that, but you let people live a life that means they don't have to wonder where the hell their next paycheck is coming from, if they're going to get one, if their house is going to be foreclosed on, can they get health care for their kids, do they have health care for themselves, and are they getting proper nutrition, all in the wealthiest country in the world. So working with these guys, fairness and reasonableness will never get us anywhere, I hate to say it.
Yeah, it's a terrible thing. I mean, that's the first time I've ever been on a negotiating committee, and I tell you what, it was pretty sad. I mean, all the money that's in this country, and to be treated like that is an out-and-out attack on the unions.
Well, you're right. And
a lot of that going around, isn't there?
And Jim, I just looked at the clock. I got to go. Thanks for being our last caller. For the callers left on hold, my apologies.
There's a couple of emails I didn't get to, but we'll try to get to them next week.
Yeah, and Athena and Sarah,
thank you so much
for doing what you do here. And, hey, this will be a podcast available at noon tomorrow, and we'll talk next week.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with more Night Call right after this.
We know you love to save money. That's why we know you'll love MotorCityDailyDeal.com. Each weekday, MotorCityDailyDeal.com sends an unbelievable deal right to your inbox. We're working with local businesses to make sure these deals save you 50 to 85% off. Restaurants, salons, spas, events, and more. You get incredible deals from great local businesses like these.
Friends Hair and Nail in Grosse Pointe Woods. AbbeyBody.com. Fusion Salon in Royal Oak. Dynamite Auto in Mount Clemens, and Brzezik Cafe in Clinton Township.
And these deals are so good, they're only available for 24 hours. That's right, just 24 hours, then they're gone. MotorCityDailyDeal.com. It's your new local way to save on all the cool things you love to eat, see, and do. Log on, sign up, and save with MotorCityDailyDeal.com. That's MotorCityDailyDeal.com. MotorCityDailyDeal.com.
Don't just dream about a brighter future. Go for it. If you want to pursue a career involving technology, look to a leader in technology education, ITT Technical Institute. ITT Tech offers career-focused programs in electronics technology, information technology, and drafting and design. Call 800-741-5123. You can develop knowledge and skills that you can use to pursue opportunities in a variety of career fields. ITT Tech's programs are designed to give you you practical, real-world experience. Classes and day or evening courses meet just a few days each week. Career services are available for students and graduates, and financial aid is available for those who qualify. Would a career involving technology make your dreams come true? Call ITT Tech right now for more information. Call 800-741-5123. 800-741-5123. That's 800-741-5123.
These days, people of all ages, including adults, can have a perfect smile. Thanks to today's technology, people with crooked teeth may no longer need to wear metal braces. One option many adults prefer is invisible braces. Instead of the typical metal bands or brackets that are cemented to teeth, these braces are clear plastic trays. Some advantages of invisible braces are they can be removed for eating and for brushing and flossing. They are practically invisible to see, and they are less irritating to gums than traditional braces. Keep in mind that invisible braces are only available for people who need minor corrective work. If you are considering braces and would like to learn more about invisible braces, speak with your dentist. You're never too old for a beautiful smile. For the ADA Dental Minute, I'm Dr. Maria Lopez Howell. For more information, visit our website at ada.org.
Now's the time.
Now's the time to make a difference.
Now's the time to do what's right.
To help a family.
Now's the time to volunteer.
To make a commitment.
To make new friends.
To make dreams come true.
To help a child.
Now's the time to help Habitat for Humanity build hope and change lives with a family in your community or around the world.
Now's the time.
Now, more than ever, help build it.
Visit Habitat.org.
Man up with 101 WRIF and Jim Beam for another Riff Ultimate Man Card Adventure. Listen to win your very own WRIF Man Card or Wool Man Card, along with tickets to see an exclusive performance with Kid Rock in the intimate setting of the Machine Shop in Flint. One lucky Riff winner will also head to the show Kid Rock style, taking a limo to the show with pre-show party passes, and you'll get to meet the band. The Riff's Ultimate Man Card Adventure. Listen and win from Jim Beam Kentucky Straight Bourbon Whiskey and 101 WRIF. Everything that works. 101 WRIF and WRIF HD1 Detroit.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Peter Werby here with you. Thanks for joining me. I have a friend of mine who has insomnia, and one phrase I hear from her very frequently is that sleep is a wonderful thing. And most of us know somebody that has insomnia. That's pretty widespread throughout our society. And we feel badly for people. Most of us who don't have insomnia have had sleepless nights or had issues that have kept us up, and we're sort of aware how distressing it is. But it's way beyond that. And it took a book that I recently received from the University of California Press called Insomniac to really give me a full idea of what it's all about. It's written by Gail Green, and Gail Green is professor of literature and women's studies at Scripps College. That's in Claremont, California. She's published books on Shakespeare, women writers, and scientific issues, and she's most recently published a book, Doris Lessing, The Politics of Change, and another book, The Woman Who Knew Too Much, Alice Stewart and the Secrets of Radiation. She's a member of the American Academy of Sleep Medicine. That's a professional medical society for researchers and clinicians. And she's the patient representative on the board of the American Insomnia Association. We're reaching her at her home near Berkeley, California. Gail Green, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Thank you, Peter. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, people that don't have insomnia really do tend to underestimate its effect on people. Has that been your experience?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, people take sleep for granted. When it works well, they just don't even notice that it exists. And this has been a real problem because it means that research has not looked at sleep until quite recently. You know, it's the invisible third of life. It, you know, lights out, systems down, what's to talk about. So sleep has been very little studied. This attitude has gone to the scientific community at large until the middle of the 20th century, when they discovered REM sleep and realized how very much is going on in sleep, how our brains are you know, active and our bodies are replenishing themselves, and how important it's the fuel of life. Sleep is the fuel of life. So it's less taken for granted by scientists now, but still taken for granted by the population at large.
Mm-hmm. Mostly people consider it personal misery, but in your book, Insomniac, you list all the other effects it has on one's personal and professional lives. I wonder maybe you could expand on that a little.
Yeah, well, it is ironic that it takes an insomniac to really tell you, you know, how very important this is to your life, because when it doesn't work, I mean, it affects the cognitive functioning. First of all, you don't have your mind. Your attention, your memory, all of those things are, you know, severely impacted. And then your mood is just, people cannot, I've often been asked, are you a cranky person? Because I say somewhere in the book, this is a cranky book. And I said, which me are we talking about? The me with sleep or the me without sleep? You know, I'm fine when I get sleep. When I don't get sleep, yeah, I'm cranky. Yeah, I'm irritable. I'm on the verge of tears or tantrum. But so's everybody, you know. And you know, when you drag sleep loss out over time, then you have a person who really, you know, does become psychologically impaired. The conventional explanation for insomnia is it's depression or anxiety, but people actually get that way when they can't sleep. So they're looking at the consequence of the disorder and you know, saying that it's the cause, which is one of the things I found in the book. I mean, that was one of my strong messages, was that this is not a psychological disorder. This is actually just a physiological consequence of not being able to sleep. We do become psychologically a bit of a mess.
Well, you mentioned the downside to one's cognitive abilities and probably creative abilities, but Gail Green, you're a professor of literature and women's studies. You've published books on Shakespeare, on women's writers, scientific issues, so at least... And you have your 500-page book in some here. So,
my function.
Yeah, well, I mean, we have like high-functioning alcoholics.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. And I mean, this has been a lifetime of learning how to sort of manage it. It's also been an enormous amount of luck. I'm an academic, which means I get to structure my own hours. I don't have to be functioning at, you know, 8 in the morning. I couldn't have done that. And the people I interviewed a lot of insomniacs for this book, and they were really wrecked by these schedules, you know, the 9-to-5, the 8-to-5 schedules, the really demanding regular, you know, kinds of work schedules that most people have. And plus, if you're a mother, I mean, if you're raising kids, that imposes a regularity of schedule. These are the people I found that were really the most severely impacted by this disorder. And there are so many of us, you know. I thought, I think I started this book with woe is me. Mm-hmm. And then I realized about halfway through, wait a minute, you're one of the lucky ones. You're an academic. You can structure your time. You can stand back and look at this problem. Other people don't get that privilege. They are really ground into this kind of, life in this society is pretty relentless. I mean, in terms mm-hmm. of the, you know, employers need to be more flexible, allow people to do work on their own time. I don't know what you do about getting the kids to school, you know, if you're lucky to get a cooperative partner. But, I am functioning, but I've been very, very lucky, and it's taken me a lifetime to sort of learn how to do it. And I'm also not adverse to taking a certain amount of medication. And if you try to do it without medication, I think in some ways it's harder.
The book is Insomniac. Gail Green is my guest on the Peter Werby Show, and her website is sleepstarved.org. I'm going to give that more times than I normally do during a broadcast, because insomnia is so widespread that I think probably a lot of you are going to want to go to that site. Actually, this is the first time in a long time that I've interviewed anybody where there was a one-word title without a subtitle. There's also, you know, it's usually Insomniac, the story of how people... do you expect, and has it been so, that this really resonated with people, just that this one word on this sort of dark cover that suggests night and has a little quarter moon there?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I expected the press to give me some trouble about that, but they didn't, because it actually did say it all. I mean, what I do in this book is tell the inside story of what it is like to live with this disorder. Other people, there have been many, many, many books on insomnia and sleep, and they tell you they're written by experts, and I often feel that these, I'm putting experts in quotation marks here, that these guys have never had a sleepless night in their life, you know, and they don't really know what it's like to kind of have to function with it and to have to be on the next day and pretend like it doesn't exist. This is a great invisible disorder, too. I can maybe come back and talk about that, the invisibility of it, which means that people, you know, it's not like you have a pair of crutches or a cast going around. I mean, nobody knows that you've had 2-3 hours of sleep the night before. I haven't had a whole lot of sleep last night. I have to confess this to you. This interview is not the easiest. I wanted to find out what the world looked like to insomniacs, you know, not only myself, but to other insomniacs. So I went around and interviewed a whole lot of them. And as I say, I found out I really was one of the lucky ones. But I also wanted to find out what the science knew about this disorder, and it turns out very little. I mean, that was really a shocking thing about it. Well, it wasn't so shocking because I'd been getting the same sort of dumb old advice all my life, and I thought, where is the science after 50 years? You know, I've been an insomniac ever since I can remember. My father was a doctor, so he would tell me sort of the conventional, you know, go to bed earlier, go to bed at the same time. You get so wound up, don't you? And, you know, when you hear the same advice for 50 years, you begin to think, where is the science? So that's the other question I had, you know, what does the world look like to insomniacs, but also what is the science up to?
Mm-hmm. Well, go ahead.
Yeah, so it became a lot about the scientific, you know, state of the art on insomnia.
Well, let's do this. I mean, I rarely structure interview and just kind of let them grow, but I have a number of questions. If someone would have said to me, why do so many people that I know have insomnia, I would say, well, it's a product of the modern world. There's so much stress. There's so much noise. There's so much going around in what the Buddhists call our monkey brains that no wonder that great numbers of people don't sleep or have great trouble sleeping. And I conceived of this as completely a modern phenomenon. But maybe you could speak to that, and also tag on to it what you call it a disorder, and you're a member of the American Academy of Sleep Medicine. So talk about, if you would, it's modernity, if it or lack of it actually, and also what's considered to be the physiological or psychological origins of it.
Yeah, there's no question that life today is really not conducive to good rest. I mean, the demands, you know, placed on us, the anxieties, I mean, insomnia is up, you know, since last October, since the kind of economic crash. So it's obviously hooked into modern life. Also, modern life is unforgiving. I mean, if you live in a village, a third world village, there's just more, you don't have to be quite so, you know, functional so early. So there's not so much riding on it. Sleep, there's many more forms that sleep takes in traditional societies and in there's biphasic sleep. I mean, people sleep, you know, some in the siesta cultures is the best known. But there's other forms of it, you know, where sleep just occurs in little pieces here and there and the other. You nap during the day, you're up at night. It's more forgiving. They found that, you know, we probably slept in the past in this way. That sleep in an 8-hour consolidated block is probably a factor of the Industrial Revolution and electricity. I mean, that it, you know, it made us have to adhere to factory time rather than sort of natural time. So the modern world, yeah, is very sleep unfriendly, and there's also this kind of sleep machismo. Oh, you don't really need that much sleep, and the really tough ones that get to the top, they don't need sleep at all. You know, so we don't respect sleep. We don't have a kind of we don't go with our body's needs. So yeah, all of that makes for, I think I would say, probably a whole lot more sleep problems than there ever were in the past. Of course, it's difficult to know if that's really the case. But, okay, having said that, there is also enormous variability when it comes to sleep. I mean, some people have stronger sleep systems and some people have weaker sleep systems. That's, you know, just the way some people are, you know, 6'2" and other people are 5'2". I mean, there's just, it's a physiological system. And there are, you know, morning people and evening people and short sleepers and long sleepers and fitful sleepers and deep sleepers. And the science is beginning to understand the genetic basis of these differences in sleepers. In fact, you've got some very interesting scientists right there at Henry Ford Hospital in Detroit who are really onto the way the sleep system works. And it's this huge variability, as with any physiological, biological system, you know.
This is physiological. That's what I'm
yeah,
wondering.
This is
yeah,
physiological. Okay. I mean, there are good sleepers and bad sleepers. And God forbid, you know, if you end up having a weak, fragile system in this society, you know, you put the two together and you get, you really get a population where a third of the people are complaining about insomnia. That's a statistic. It's just huge. You know, I mean, some people are less endowed than others, well endowed than others. I mean, think of it. You know, we know this with the digestive system or the muscular skeletal system or the respiratory system. All of these systems, you know, people have weak lungs, weak stomachs, you know, who, you know, we're different. We're physiologically different. And so it is with sleep. I mean, and, you know, if you have a fragile sleep system and then you are, you know, in a situation in the society which is demanding, you know, just demanding that you be on and functioning, I mean, you're going to get really kind of mangled by that, and a lot of people do. And this is why I think we have such a huge, you know, I don't think the sleep system has changed in over you know, the eons. I mean, mm-hmm. I think probably there always were fragile and stronger sleepers, but village life was more forgiving. Absorbed eccentricity more easily than our own society does.
Is there more of a, or is there also rather a psychological component? I know that people that have insomnia tell me they're fearful about going to sleep because they know they're not going to sleep.
Oh, yeah. Well, that can develop over time. Yeah, you really do become afraid of the bedroom because, you know, my God, you know, I'm going to have another sleepless night. And there are behavioral methods that can be effective with that, you know, to kind of break that cycle. But even this thing of like, you look at somebody and you say, that person is really stressed, you know, I mean, they ought to get a grip, they ought to, and, you know, often this is a physiological thing. I mean, there are stress systems that are more highly reactive than other stress systems. There are also people who are, you know, just type A, neurotic, crazy, you know, stressed, obsessive people who sleep like stones, who sleep just beautifully. I mean, it has nothing to do with the sleep system. You know, they're just like, I mean, I have several people in my own circle of acquaintance who I'd look at and say, this person is like, you know, you would think this person would be an insomniac, and they sleep quite well. So that was one of the things that kind of broke that equation of sleep disorder equals psychological disorder. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. Hmm. Often no. I mean, more often than one thinks. That's one of the reasons I wrote the book. I didn't, you know, really wanted to say, bottom line, we're really not crazy, you know. We're differently abled.
Okay. The book is Insomniac. The author is Gail Green. She's my guest on the Peter Werby Show. Her website is sleepstarved.org. Sleepstarved.org. There'll be a link on my website as well. Peter Werby, that's Werbe.com as well. You mentioned that the part of the structure of this book, and we can talk about the other parts as well, because I'm sure there's some people who want to know some suggested solutions or places to go for, but you interviewed a lot of people. How did you find fellow insomniacs did you travel a lot? I mean, it's kind of unusual, so I want to talk to you about not sleeping, but tell us about those.
Yeah, this is a web-enabled book. I mean, I couldn't have done this without the web, you know. I mean, you just, well, I put it, first of all, I ran ads. I ran ads in, you know, kind of pricey places and got really, really fascinating responses. And then, of course, I would just talk to anybody, you know, on a personal, I mean, I became asleep, you know, I'd accost people in line at the theater. Like, so how do you sleep, you know? Or I'd meet somebody who had some kind of interesting tick, like the guy who works on my computer, who's just so tightly wound. And I'd say to him, so how do you sleep? You know, and he turns out sleeps very well. So I just talked to everybody, and I met friends of friends and students. I put out a huge thing at my colleges, and I got quite a lot of really, really interesting stuff from students who are not immune to this problem at all. There's huge stress, a huge amount of pressure on young people, and they're just like, you know, they're responding as grown-ups do, you know, not sleeping very well. I just got a lot of really heart-rending stories of people who, and I still do. I mean, the reader mail I get about this book is just, it leaves me kind of like, because I don't know what to tell, where to tell people to go. I mean, it's not like I can say, oh, there's this terrific person here, there's this terrific person here. I wish I could. But what I can say to people is do your own research, find your own way. Sleep is highly individual. We're all different in terms of the way we sleep, in the terms of the way we don't sleep. You know, like I, for example, assume that all women would have a hormonal link to insomnia because I always did. They don't. I mean, some women do and some women do not. So we're all, you know, highly individual. We have to find our own way. The web is a marvelous resource. You find out what works for other people. You try everything. You just simply bring it home and try it. And you may find the key, you know, that unlocks. I mean, I have a whole chapter on this in my book, and I've had people write me about things I haven't even tried in the book because I just haven't been, you know, gotten it together enough to try these, you know, vitamin cocktails and things that actually this, you know, people have found that they've worked. I use books on tape. I mean, when I wake up at night, I tend not to get up and do something else as the experts tell you you should do because that totally wakes me up. But I listen to a recorded book, and it often just helps me, you know, get back to sleep. Often does not, but it's a thing that people should know about. There are lots of ways out there, you know, but you have to find out what your problem is. If it is anxiety about the bed place, then you really should try these behavioral modification techniques. You know, troubleshoot your own condition. You yourself have to make yourself an expert in your condition. And there are ways, you know, people have found ways of dealing with it. So that's the hopeful message. It's not a one-size-fits-all solution. There are no one-size-fits-all solutions. But there are things that people have found that work.
You know, I wish you'd tell us a little about this column that you wrote for Tara Parker Pope's column called Well, W-E-L-L, in the New York Times. Let me see. Oh, it was over a year ago. And you talked about humor. And, that is kind of horrible. I mean, maybe I shouldn't make public confessions, but I almost could feel jokes coming up. Well, it's your book, Insomniac, is 500 pages. You probably had a lot of time to write it. Ha, ha, ha.
Ha, ha, ha.
But you speak to that. I wonder if you could just even kind of, it certainly immediately raised my sensitivity level. And although you realize I managed to sneak that one in. The little section in your column that you talk about if you say I'm an insomniac and then people say to you about, you know, I go to sleep as soon as my head hits the pillow.
Yeah, yeah, right. That's what I mean. It's the insensitivity to sleep. I mean, it's not. I don't mean people's personal insensitivity, horrible person, but it's a cultural insensitivity to it. You know, it's like. Right. I mean, you wouldn't say to somebody, you know, who had some horrible health problem, oh, well, that's funny because I can, you know, run the marathon, you know. You wouldn't say that to a person. But if you meet an insomniac, you say, oh, my head hits the pillow and I'm out. We're just not, we're not cued into sleep. We don't respect it. It's not, productive in our terms, and it's a waste. I mean, it's positively seen as a waste of time. I mean, my students say, you know, you snooze, you lose. I'll sleep when I'm dead, you know.
Yeah.
They're working on their sleep machismo. But, yeah, the humor is, I mean, that's actually the first line of the book. The first thing to go is your sense of humor. I mean, it's kind of like this tread or this oil that, you know, this sort of lubricant for living that you just don't have when you don't have a night's sleep. And I thought it was just very important to get that across, because people who do have that tread and that lubricant, they don't get it. They just don't see that we're not dealing. It's not a level playing field here. You know?
Let me just expand. In your column, you quote British comedian David Baddiel.
Yes.
And he says, when people say to him, well, I can fall asleep right away, he says, when I see someone in a wheelchair, I don't say, really? Because I can do this, and hops around the stage on one leg. Hey, look at that.
I thought that was a great line.
Indeed. In many ways, you've already touched on what normally would be the end of an interview, and we're almost at it with Gail Green in her book Insomniac from University of California Press. And that was it. You said that essentially that people had to do their own research. And I don't know. I mean, do most people have strategies? I mean, personally, you know, without doing research, people say, oh, I'll take warm milk, or I, you know, do people develop those, or do you think it really is important to expand their field of information about this? Certainly reading this book, I know who I'm giving it to.
Yeah, I don't know how to answer the thing about most people. I mean, people are at all levels, you know, with this in relationship to this problem. There are people who are just raw and what should I do, and I have no handle on it. There are other people who say, well, you know, I find that if I get up in the middle of the night and I just do a little bit of yoga, or I watch a little TV and I don't get stressed out about it, I can usually, you know, manage, and I'll, you know, sleep the next night or something like that, who've worked out, you know, attitudes about it. There's me that's, you know, I take a little bit of a short-acting sleeping pill for the second part of the night. I can usually get to sleep on my own. That's another difference in the kinds of insomnia, is there's sleep onset where you can't get to sleep, and then there's sleep maintenance where you can't hold, you know, can't continue sleep. I usually can get to sleep, but then I'm awake 2 or 3 or 4 hours a little later. Late, and I nibble off a little piece of a pill and listen to a book on tape, and you know, that way I sort of patch together 6 or 7 hours of sleep. So that's, you know, the way I found to manage it. You know, this drug cocktail in my chapter 11. So there's just all different, you know, people are at all different stages with it. I mean, and it's just important to realize that many people have gotten a handle on it, and it is possible to live with it.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being on the show. My guest has been Gail Green, and her book is Insomniac. It's from the University of California Press. They have lots of great titles, as you probably can tell by the number of authors that I interview from that press. It's ucpress.edu, and Gail Green's book, Insomniac, is there. But also, it's posted at sleepstarved.org. The book is there, and a lot of other material about insomnia. And it'll be linked on my site, peterwerbe.com, W-E-R-B-E. Gail Green, thank you so much for being on my show.
Thank you.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
Are you ready to do something about your high credit card debt? Tired of paying double-digit interest rates, late fees, over-limit fees? It's time to stop the madness. Get out of debt the safe and affordable way with Credit Card Relief. With Credit Card Relief, there are no upfront fees, no monthly maintenance fees, and no settlement fees. You don't pay anything until a debt is settled, all with a 90-day money-back guarantee. That's Credit Card Relief, managed by local attorneys in-state, with workout plans tailored to your debt situation. Get out of debt in months instead of years, all while saving thousands in future bank fees. Call the original Credit Card Relief, where the consultation is free and the results are real.
Call 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. That's Credit Card Relief. 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282.
Does your furnace need repair? Just go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Is your roof leaking? Or are you ready to replace your windows? Log on to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Big or small, no matter what your home improvement need, now it's easy to find the right home pro at fixitfast.servicemagic.com. Service Magic is a free online source of licensed and insured contractors in hundreds of home improvement categories. You can have instant access to roofers, plumbers, maids, handymen, chimney sweeps, remodelers, and many other professionals. Visit fixitfast.servicemagic.com and find the right home pro for your project. It's easy and it's free, and it's the source to find neighbor-recommended contractors in your area. Now you can hire a pre-screened home pro with confidence. Go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. It's quick, it's free, and there's no obligation. Go to fixitfast.servicemagic.com. That's fixitfast.servicemagic.com.
Our son would go from "Good morning, Mom," to words you'd never expect to come out of your child's mouth. Our pain came from not knowing what to do. He was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia. 5 or 6 years later, he was diagnosed with obsessive-compulsive disorder. I think the hardest part of living with someone who has a mental illness is thinking that you're alone, that no one else could understand. NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, is made up of people who live it every day. We lean on each other, and we learn from each other. NAMI doesn't let anyone give up hope. My name is Mary Tadikin, and I can tell you what NAMI has meant for my family. It has meant that we are a family.
1 in 5 adults lives with depression, schizophrenia, anxiety, or other mental illnesses. NAMI provides education and support to these families and individuals. To find a local chapter, go to NAMI.org or call 800-950-NAMI.
Who's watching your home when you're not there? It could be a burglar. Burglars prefer to break in when they think no one is home and no one will stop them. Don't be an easy target for intruders. Protect your home with a free security system monitored by ADT, the leader in home security. Pick up your phone now and get free hardware, free medical and fire alerts, and free activation. It's an $850 value. Just call Protect Your Home, your authorized ADT dealer, at 1-877-653-8844. You'll get 24-hour protection, and there's no cost for parts or activation. Call now about a free security system monitored by ADT. Call 1-877-653-8844. $99 installation charge, 36-month monitoring agreement at $35.99 per month. Call for terms and conditions to this offer and protect your home license numbers. Call now, 1-877-653-8844. That's 1-877-653-8844.
Now, Night Call is back. On 101 WRIF Detroit, here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. A pleasure to be with you. Some of you are going to be hearing this for the first time. I just came back from a trip to the Republic of Cuba. And this was on an approved journalist trip to find out information, and primarily for these radio broadcasts. So much is said about Cuba from Washington. It's been a thorn in the side of any number of administrations since 1958. And I thought I'd go take a look for myself. That's not what this show is about. It's just kind of the synchronicity of it all, because joining me is Jay Cantor. Jay Cantor has reissued his novel, The Death of Che Guevara. Jay Cantor is the author of two other novels, Great Neck and Crazy Cat. He also has two books of essays, The Space Between Literature and Politics, and one with a terrific title, On Giving Birth to One's Own Mother. He's a MacArthur Prize Fellow, and he teaches at Tufts University. We're reaching him in Cambridge, Massachusetts, where he lives. Jay Cantor, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Thank you.
I didn't tell you that little piece of news before we started, did
no.
I?
No. Your news is more up to date than mine.
Well, I kept thinking when I saw this, when I received this from Vintage, the publisher, mm-hmm. I said, "Boy, why does this sound familiar? The Death of Che Guevara." I said, "Well, it's a new novel by Jay Cantor. It's actually not a new novel at all, is it? It's a reissue. Tell us a little about its history."
The book began for me in 68 when I was in college. I was very active working in the anti-war movement then. And I saw a picture, but I can't say, you know, I was very active in working in the anti-war movement. I was trying to understand the causes of the war in Vietnam. and the way out of it. But I can't say that my politics, you know, I was 19 years old, and I thought I knew a lot. And at the same time, I think I knew that I knew next to nothing. But I saw a picture of Che Guevara's corpse in Bolivia, a famous picture of him. And it was published along with the diaries of the Bolivian campaign, the campaign in which he was captured and met his death, executed actually at the orders of the Central Intelligence Agency.
Maybe you, let me just stop you one second. All of a sudden, I'm almost fearful that...
Who is this Che Guevara?
Yeah, Che Guevara, the Cuban revolutionary, Fidel Castro's close comrade in arms, who decides he just doesn't want to be a bureaucrat in Cuba. In the 60s, he leaves for Bolivia to lead a revolutionary movement. He's captured. He's executed. And you described that. Yeah, so I'm sorry. Go ahead. It was actually, I was remiss.
That's dead on. He was an Argentinian doctor who met Castro, who had a completely ridiculous idea that they would take a boat from Mexico with a small handful of men and that they would make a revolution in Cuba. And he believed him and joined him, and most of them died within the first days that the boat landed, but they did indeed make the revolution that's been a thorn in the side of many administrations.
Mm-hmm.
And he not only didn't want to be a bureaucrat, he thought that if there weren't other countries, particularly in Latin America, following the same socialist path, that the Cuban Revolution would be starved and die.
Yeah, and the death of Che Guevara, the title of your novel, Jay Cantor, is set it's from 1928 to 1967, the years of Ernesto Che Guevara's life and death. So, again, you were telling me the history, your college.
Yeah, you were saying, how did it come about? I was looking at a picture of his corpse, and I couldn't say why. It was emaciated. He'd been starving in Cuba. He suffered from starving in Bolivia. Had gotten no response from the peasants there, and had been captured because of that. He suffered from terrible asthma. His body was emaciated when he was caught, and his chest quite wrecked from the asthma and riddled with bullets. And the picture moved me, and that began the research that led to the book.
Mm-hmm.
I think I felt also that through learning about Guevara, I would learn not only about the Cuban Revolution, but something about how the United States looked to the rest of the world.
Well, it originally appeared in hardcover.
Right.
And that was in 1983, yet it's copyrighted in 1977. So what happened to it in the...
That I don't understand. Oh, you know why that is? It's because parts appeared in magazines.
Oh, I see.
I started in 67, I think parts... And I kept having to rewrite. The more that I learned about politics and the more that as history and as the world turned and I realized that everything that I thought was wrong repeatedly, I kept having to rewrite. And the 77 is because parts of it appeared in magazines in 77. The whole manuscript was done in 82, and it was published in 83.
Okay.
And it came out in paper a few years after that, then went out of print and has come back into paperback now.
Why suddenly has it come back? Who initiated that?
Actually, that has more to do with the vagaries of publishing. The book I wrote, it stayed in print, and then I wrote a book called Crazy Cat which is about a cat who used to work in a comic strip, a very different kind of book.
Right.
And it came out in 88, and then and came out again in paper, and then it went out of print. And then my next book, Great Neck, which is about the anti-war movement and the civil rights movement in America in the 60s and 70s, took me some 15 years to write. And it's because that book was published that all of the books came back into print.
Okay, well, let's look at that. Well, one more question about the printing history. You said that as you began rewriting, as you began learning more and more, is there a difference in the text between 1983 and 2005?
No. The text, I given the opportunity, I probably would rewrite it again. But finally, I learned something about writing a novel, and you have to write a novel A novel isn't a series of conclusions. A novel is a series of questions about the world. And as I learned that and began to turn this book into a series of questions more than a questions are open-ended and don't require quite so much rewriting.
Mm. Well, and I want to ask you about some of those questions, but maybe a way to address some of them. One of the reasons that I brought up my recent trip to the island of Cuba was that it is absolutely startling, the Che iconography that exists there. It's everywhere. There's no big posters of Fidel or Raul Castro or anybody, but Che is literally everywhere. You go on a bus and there's little stickers of Che. There's billboards in beautiful preserved colonial towns like Cienfuegos. On the main square, instead of having a billboard for toothpaste, it says, the ideas of Che live, they will live forever. And Jean-Paul Sartre, the existentialist philosopher, said that he was the most complete human being of our age. Wow, that's...
okay. I don't know the most complete, but I would say this. He rang with one truth, that it was right to rebel, that the conditions under which the great mass of humanity lived were intolerable, that a solution had to be found, and that one had to pursue that solution wherever it took one, in his case, to the jungle in Bolivia. And he lived that. He lived it uncompromisingly. And so his life rings with a single note. Fidel's life, Raul's life, or the life of somebody, or people trying to build a nation, people who have made compromises along the way, bureaucrats, as you say, Che's life has the purity of striking exactly one note and striking it in tune and purely.
Hmm. And the fact that his life was cut short, of course.
That may be why.
Yeah, well, I was going to say that it ends on a tragic and romantic note, and I don't say that in a disparaging or cynical way.
I think
either.
It's very likely. It's hard to imagine. I think something about the singularity of the man, singular in the sense that his life makes one statement, it's hard to imagine it continuing. Had they won in Bolivia, before they were in Bolivia, one should say, he went to the Congo to try to make a revolution there.
Mm-hmm.
That failed miserably. He then went to Bolivia. If he'd succeeded in Bolivia, there's every reason to imagine he would have gone someplace else until he died. He would have gone on his quest as he understood it. It's hard to imagine him as an old man watching his life on a TV movie about his life.
I was thinking that I'm sure have seen Motorcycle Diaries. Right?
I have.
And then his partner on his motorcycle trip, who's a man probably in his mid 80s now.
Yeah.
I was thinking that how unusual that would have been if he.
Right.
I think
Alberto Granados, who wrote really one of the most wonderful books about Guevara, called My Friend Che, about those years, very direct and honest portrait about a man who transformed Granados' life. You know, Granados leaves with him and ends up after staying in Cuba to help build the medical system in Cuba. And I think Granados somewhere says that. You can't imagine Che old. He would have kept going. He would have died as he died.
Talk to us a little, if you would, about maybe I'm trying to think of a not so big a word, the iconography, the fact that these images of Che, certainly they prevail in Cuba with a very strong social and political message that speaks to the Cuban people right there, but you go to like the fanciest boutiques now. In fact, there's been an uptick in interest in that. What do you make of that? Why?
Well, I think the problem is, for him, the words "it's right to rebel," which I think is the slogan that begins the Cultural Revolution in China, they had a very particular meaning. It was right to work against imperialism. As you say, it had a political meaning for him. But it's also a very open-ended idea, rebellion. Bart Simpson rebels. I think there's a famous cartoon of Che Guevara wearing a Bart Simpson T-shirt. And there's a way in which there's a famous movie of Marlon Brando called The Wild One, where he plays a guy on a part of a motorcycle gang, and they say to him, "Oh, why are you so angry? What are you rebelling against?" And Brando says, "What do you got?" And there is there's something about being young. It's a period where you feel like you want to rebel against your own body, and you want to rebel against your teachers at school and the principal, and youth culture and the people who sell youth culture always want to tap into that and turn it into a product for you to buy. And Che has that very open-ended quality of it's right to rebel. Well, it's right to rebel against your principal. It's right to rebel against. But he had a very specific meaning in mind for that. And in Cuba and throughout Latin America, his life still has that meaning.
Yeah, and a meaning that we see both from your book, The Death of Che Guevara, Che Cantor, and for conditions still throughout Latin America,
right,
that it's a life and death issue. And but what's being sold here are these images of rebellion. So I don't know whether that's a positive or
a
negative.
No, it's not. I mean, I think if the results are in. You take anything and you make it abstract and distant enough like that so that rebellion can mean anything, eventually it will mean nothing.
Or it can mean rebellion means wearing a symbol of rebellion.
Rebellion, right. You don't even have to rebel against your teacher. You just have to rebel something that says, f*** the teacher.
Yeah.
Can I say that?
I know, but let's move on.
Okay. Or something that
says. Yeah, right.
Substitute a word. Please. Whatever. And, and at that point it becomes saleable and empty.
Well, let me ask you some about the structure of this book. It's quite detailed. One would almost over 500 pages. And how does one, as a novelist, particularly as a fairly young one, since the genesis of this was in the
starting young
in the late 60s,
getting gray haired as I wrote.
Okay.
Yeah.
How do you find out so much information? I mean, how much of it is out of the mind of Che Cantor? How much of it is his historical research?
At the beginning of Moby Dick, Melville says, I swam through libraries. I went where I could, but there's a lot of research. There's an enormous amount of research in the book. And there's an enormous amount of research so that when I imagined something, I tried to make it fit seamlessly with what was real.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you an example of that, which I find odd and almost troubling. One of the things that the book is about is how the stories that we tell about history, which turn into myths and fiction, like my book, move people to take action, and so they make history. That many of the people are moved by stories, but they make real history. So I wanted to dramatize. Che was a doctor, and unlike most doctors, he took away a violent revolution, and I wanted to dramatize that in his life. So I wanted to contrast him with a great anti-imperialist figure, Mahatma Gandhi, who had taken a nonviolent path.
Right.
And in the book, I make Guevara a follower of Gandhi. I was doing a radio interview like this recently, and I heard two experts on Guevara, one who teaches literature at Barnard College, one who works, actually a film reviewer of the Village Voice, and they both spoke of Guevara's Gandhi and his Gandhi period. His Gandhi period exists only in my novel. And I didn't know what to say. I'd written a book about how fiction makes history, and it was changing history.
Were there some art forgers who created a Picasso period? And
yeah,
Picasso kept saying,
like that.
He kept saying, I never painted these.
But having said that, it was true to the, I think the reason they believed it was true to the internal life of Guevara. He was a person who wanted to help people, who was moved, as he said, by great feelings of love, and yet, eventually moved towards violence as the way to do that. And that's an enormously hard, brutal, difficult conflict within a person. And you can give the name Gandhi to one half of it, or you can give the name, as Guevara did, of love to one half of it. But he thought that love meant picking up the gun.
Hmm. The book is The Death of Che Guevara. It's a novel written by Jay Cantor, reissued from its 1983 hardback edition. It's now in paper by Vintage. You're listening to the Peter Werby Show. You can link on to this, by the way, to the Vintage site that describes the book by going to peterwerby.com. There's still something, Jay Cantor, nagging at me because...
Now you're going to nag at me.
Right? Yeah, sure. That the larger in life nature of this man who helped make a revolution in a pretty small country that was this oppressive dictatorship supported by the United States, overrun by American mafia and American corporations. So, I mean, that's worthy of telling. But the fact, when it even struck me again when you were talking about these academics who are Che experts, that this is an enormous figure, and you've hinted or even spoke a little to this because I've kind of asked the question before, but it's something that there's something here.
I think you have to look again. The other thing to say is once they made the revolution, Guevara became Minister of Finance in Cuba. He was the architect, probably the chief architect of the Cuban economy, with its some successes and with an enormous amounts of failures. And some of those failures belonged to him. And they were this. He really thought that people would, could, and should work out of love of the collective, out of love for other people, not for profit in any way, not for personal gain in any way. And he lived his life according to that, and he thought that others would live their lives in that way.
He actually wanted to create, as he said, a socialist man, a different prototype of
what
human
it meant
interaction.
To be a human being.
Yeah.
A human being, as I say, who was moved for love of others and love of the work that they could do for others. That kind of purity was enacted in his life. He was not a person who was looking to get a summer house as Minister of Finance. He was singular in always trying to understand what it would mean to embody that ideal in the world and to live it.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something compelling about that. It's, as I say, there are enormous numbers of mistakes that need to be put in, on his debit sheet, but there is something compelling about somebody who lives their life according to what they believe in and is ever trying to see what it would mean, despite the risks, to continue to live their life in that way.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever heard the joke, and I won't even try it in Spanish, but essentially the Fidel was, and this is all apocryphal, but that said to his inner circle, which of you is the best economista, the best economist? And Chase says, I will. And he says, all right. You're the Minister of Finance, and after, he said, what do you know about the economy? What are you talking about? He said, I asked who was the best economista. He said, oh, I thought you said communista.
Well, yes.
But that leads me...
He would have thought that the two came together.
Yes, that leads me to the question, yeah. Though, that that in the West, well, let me say in the United States particularly, that that Che, although a symbol of rebellion, in reality, along with Fidel, is thought of as someone that presided over a very harsh totalitarian society, and that what you were ascribing as these egalitarian and idealistic ways, in fact, once it was put into practice, was a bureaucratic police state.
There are certainly, how far one wants to take that, I can't say, but any account of Guevara's life that left that out would be untrue.
Mm-hmm.
11. I'll tell you a good thing about my book. Somewhere on the internet, in one of the sites devoted to Guevara, they said, people who think Guevara is a saint hate this book. People who think he's a devil hate this book, my book. So I think he got it about right.
There you go. On your back cover of The Death of Che Guevara, it says, a brilliant, what the hell is that word? Exegesis? Is that?
Yeah.
Right? Okay.
That is, I don't know. Actually, I don't know the back cover, but that is a word.
Okay. It's a brilliant exegesis, which I think means a good statement or expression of the psychology of radical activism. Now, one of the things I was thinking of is that what you said right at the beginning, Jay Cantor, and that is that that they carry, this is the Man of La Mancha. I mean, he carried out the impossible dream. These guys get in this boat, they invade this country that's supported by the United States, and they actually overthrow it. Is that part of the appeal to the left? That
Yeah, sure.
Yeah?
I mean, yes. Yes, I'm sorry. I don't know what to say except yes. Certainly, that's part of the appeal.
Well, is there
a certain, amount of there's a statement of the Marxist writer Gramsci that the world requires pessimism of the intellect and optimism of the will, and that can easily shade over into Don Quixote.
Yeah.
Optimism of the will. I mean, to be a leftist at this moment in the United States, you would have to be nuts.
Well,
I take it that you are, Peter.
Well, I always am so far left, I fell off the spectrum.
Yeah, right.
But so I'm not sure. Well, part of the problem with saying if you're anything is that what does that conjure up? I mean, if you say you're a leftist, does that conjure up Stalin to people? Or does it conjure up? I'm thinking somebody who we would all agree on is pretty good. Martin Luther King, that people can. I don't know. Those are questions that are so frequently manipulated by the mass media to keep us from thinking critically.
True and true.
Well, we only have a couple minutes left, and obviously, I'm always thinking, man.
Yeah, hey, I should say this. He's not the Guevara part of the effort of the probably the first biography that I had to work with was, I'm sure, funded by the Central Intelligence Agency. And published by Stein and Day. They used to do some of their publishing. And it was an attempt to turn Guevara into Stalin. That's not true. He was responsible for the execution of people, but he was not a builder of gulags. But neither was he Martin Luther King.
Mm-hmm.
It was a person who said, he said two things which are very famous. One is a revolutionary. At the risk of being ridiculous, let me say a revolutionary is guided by great feelings of love. I don't think it's ridiculous, but I can understand what people might think it. But he's also a person who said, in pursuit of that vocation, somewhat many years after that, he said, we have to become cold, violent, selective killing machines.
Wow. I like the first one better.
Yeah. But and that's a very chilling thing to say. And both of those are parts of Guevara. And the question that he asks any of us is, Latin America, as you say, continues to suffer, and to suffer enormously, as does much of the world. If you're guided by great feelings of love, what is your alternative to violence?
Mm-hmm.
Guevara is standing four square for one position, that your love will, if you really want to enact that love in the world, it will involve violence. If you reject that, then you still have to answer the question, how will you enact that love? What will your action be instead? He wasn't Martin Luther King, and I find King a very attractive figure, but he was up against something maybe even tougher than what King was up against, I can't say.
Sure.
Perhaps so. What's our answer then? Because if you take them out of the Bart Simpson category, that's the question he's asking.
I think so. Well, we're out of time, and I guess I would say that we should, particularly in this period in the world's history and the history of the United States, that we all ought to be guided by feelings of love and the goal to make it real in the world.
Right.
How we bring it out and bring it about is another thing entirely.
And as you decide that and you think about it, one of the people you'll be arguing with is Che Guevara.
All right.
I will be arguing with.
The Boston Globe says, a brave mammoth fiction, shrewd and romantic in conception, dazzling and postmodernist in construction, one is left with a pan-American legend that Jay Cantor has reworked into a passionate haunting. Thank you so much for being with me on the Peter Werber Show.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Don't just dream about a brighter future. Go for it. If you want to pursue a career involving technology, look to a leader in technology education, ITT Technical Institute. ITT Tech offers career-focused programs in electronics technology, information technology, and drafting and design. Call 800-741-5123. You can develop knowledge and skills that you can use to pursue opportunities in a variety of career fields. ITT Tech's programs are designed to give you practical, real-world experience. Classes and day or evening courses meet just a few days each week. Career services are available for students and graduates, and financial aid is available for those who qualify. Would a career involving technology make your dreams come true? Call ITT Tech right now for more information. Call 800-741-5123. 800-741-5123. That's 800-741-5123. It's amazing how great your home looks with new carpet or flooring, especially when you get an amazing value from a company you trust. That's why you should call Sears Flooring. With Sears Flooring, you'll save 20% right now. Just call 1-888-491-3939, and Sears Flooring will bring the showroom to you. Sears has a wide range of carpet, tile, hardwood, or laminate to match your style and budget. Your new flooring will be precisely installed, and your satisfaction is guaranteed. So call Sears Flooring for a free in-home consultation. You'll save 20%. Call 1-888-491-3939. Hurry, offer ends soon. Not available in all areas. Installation provided by Sears authorized licensed contractors. License information available upon request. Call Sears Flooring now and save 20%. Call 1-888-491-3939. 1-888-491-3939. Sears.
This is your Travel Minute. If you're planning a flight for business or pleasure anytime soon, here's the 3-1-1 rule for carry-on luggage to ease your way through airport security lines. Rule 1. Only 3-ounce or smaller containers of liquid or gel are permitted in carry-on luggage. However, larger containers are permitted in your check-in baggage. 2. Place your 3-ounce or smaller containers into one 1-quart size clear plastic zip-top bag. Only one bag per traveler is allowed. 3. Place the bag into the security bin with your shoes and other items as required for scanning. The rules for other personal items vary, so it's a good idea to check with your airline or travel agent before you pack for your trip.
Your Travel Minute is a public service by this station and ASTA, the American Society of Travel Agents.
Jeez, Q, it's hot as in here. What's going on?
Oh, it's only 91 degrees.
Where? In the refrigerator?
Ouch! The countertop is so hot you can fry eggs on it. And bacon and home fries. Are you on that sweat diet? No.
I'm melting my life away.
Hey, by not running my air conditioner, I'm saving energy and helping the environment.
Uh-huh. There's an easier way to help the environment. Go green. Go public. Take public transportation. It's good for the environment, and you don't have to sweat it, if you know what I mean. So you got any eggs?
No.
How about shrimp? We can fry shrimp. Do you have any shrimp?
No. I have anchovies.
No.
A message from the public transportation systems across the country. To learn more, visit publictransportation.org.
If you have a job instead of a career, will you be satisfied tomorrow? But if you develop knowledge and skills, who knows how far you can go? If you're interested in electronics technology, drafting and design, or information technology, call ITT Technical Institute. Classes meet just a few times a week, and financial aid is available to those who qualify. Call ITT Tech now for more information. 800-741-5123. 800-741-5123.
The message that the aliens are broadcasting throughout the entire universe.
Back to the Rock. On the Riff.